It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell are here. And of course, there's a lot to say. We're only in day four of the hearings on Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard, and it has been a blizzard of revelations. Paul and Richard go through it. We'll talk about the weirdly returning Moment 3 update. We've got some Xbox news, that and a lot more coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell. Episode 835, recorded Wednesday, June 28th, 2023. Sifting mud for nymphs. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Lookout. Whether on a device or in the cloud, your business data is always on the move. Minimize risk, increase visibility, and ensure compliance with Lookout's unified platform. Visit lookout.com today. And by ACI Learning. IT skills are outdated in about 18 months. Stay ahead of the curve and future-proof your business competitiveness with customizable, entertaining training. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit for more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And Richard Campbell, he going to Microsoft next week.
Tomorrow.
Hey, Richard.
Howdy.
This is the advantage of living in Vancouver. You're just up the road a piece.
Two and a half hour drive, oh. Two if I don't care about the ticket.
Sounds like you got a little choked up when you said Microsoft there. Are you okay?
Yeah. It's been a week.
I mean, I get the same way.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. That's Paul Thurrott. Gets a little emotional when he talks about Microsoft. Overcome. Unfortunately, that's his job. But, you know, yeah. These things happen. Thurrott.com, runisradio.com. We got the two. We got the best. The best in the biz. Have you been watching this hearing? This Microsoft FTC hearing? What a story there.
Oh, boy. Covering Microsoft as I do for a living and following their quarter results every quarter as I do, I have to say the amount of information we've gotten here, it stands in sharp contrast to what we usually get from this company.
This is, I told Lisa last night, I said, don't put it in writing.
No, it is astonishing. Like, so I went back and looked. This isn't in the notes per se, it doesn't really matter, but I just went back and looked. So in the last quarterly earnings report, right, Microsoft had all these vague pronouncements about gaming and Xbox, right? Gaming revenue overall was down 4%, Xbox content and services was down 3%. They've never said what the beginning number was, so we don't know
It's meaningless.
Where those things are.
It's doubled. It means nothing if you don't
Xbox
know.
Xbox hardware revenue was down 30%, blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
If you look at their post-earnings conference call, Microsoft uttered the term, Microsoft executives uttered the term Xbox 5 times. Some version of gaming 14 times compared to over 50 times for AI, over 40 times for Azure, over 40 times for cloud, and over 20 times for Windows, by the way. There's not a lot of information, you know. They said during the conference call that Xbox subscriptions, which is the combination of Xbox Live and all the Game Pass subscriptions, nearly reached $1 billion in the quarter. Not quite, but nearly. So that's almost a $1 billion business, I guess. And that's
in a quarter, $4 billion business.
Okay. Sorry. So that's what they said, right? That was nothing. And we get like one filing in this set of days of hearings, and it's like 118 bits of information that honestly are really interesting, I have to say. So it's interesting to learn more about this business. And so on that note, I want to thank the FTC. I mean, I hate you so much, but this has been a fascinating bit of disclosure that we just don't normally see.
To be clear, this is the administrative hearing to decide whether this case goes to trial, whether the FTC's case has merit. And so it's decided by a single judge. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And he could throw it out.
He's listening. So they're talking to the judge. And there's been a lot of discovery, obviously, and a lot of emails on both sides. Revealed.
Lots of redactions.
Right? Yeah. Well, that's one thing. The judge is letting them hide business information, sales information, things like that.
They are. But yet, honestly, there's so much information that has come out regardless of that. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's been some good hard numbers here.
Apple learned this in the Apple Epic lawsuit, that nobody wins in a lawsuit like this because of discovery.
Yeah, winning a lawsuit's like winning an earthquake. There's no such thing.
Right? So much is revealed, unusually embarrassing, because I don't know what it is about executives and email, but they kind of dump on
I tell you, if email. I do have an earthquake in Mexico City, I would like to win that one.
yeah.
If I could.
Hey, I was wondering why that apartment was so cheap. Well, never mind.
Yeah, you're right. I was wondering why it sways when a truck drives by. Yeah. Anyway, so there's so much here. I mean, I kind of in the notes just blurted some stuff out. It's in sort of an order, but
I'm
I think the most fascinating.
I'm going to let you drive because I just, you know.
It's yeah. Just... But I gave you guys a link to a resource at GameIndustry.biz that just, they're updating it daily, and they provide all these links to people that are writing about this stuff and all the various, you know, information that has come out. So it's been really interesting.
So that's your go-to for like what happened?
Well, right before the show, I just came across it. And I was like, oh, look at this thing. Here, you know, here's a nice, they have a nice
a timeline for all of this. You need to use the Web3 is going just great time, you know, software, and you could really do something with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Wow. So anyway, I didn't organize what I wanted to talk about here by date or whatever. I did it by kind of topic. So in the beginning, what I have is the FTC is terrible and they need to be disbanded. So
we're in day four, and they're taking testimony from executives, right?
Yeah, today we're going to see Satya Nadella. We're going to see
the CEO,
Bobby Sarron, the guy that writes the CEO of Activision. Wow. Whatever his real name is.
I wonder, is that his real name, Sauron? Because that's
no, I don't think so.
But
that's
not
how
a good choice. Oh, you call him that? Oh, okay. You mean Bobby Kotick? Like, okay, now I get
that
it.
Guy.
Okay.
As I asked Brad this morning, I mean, do you think this guy's going to show up on the stand? Like, does he actually take human form?
Such a Sauron and Bobby Sauron. Like I get it. Okay.
Like a blinking eye on the stand. You know. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
He's not supposed to be that good of a guy. Anywho, the FTC, as you do, you hire expert witnesses. So they hired an economist, I think from Harvard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy has no idea what he's talking about. Awesome. So he literally, when pressed by Microsoft's lawyers, could not explain why this acquisition could in any way harm competition.
Oops.
And it's one of the things that we've seen a lot in this case, and this is something that's kind of happened over time, is like how you frame it. So from Microsoft's perspective, honestly, it kind of doesn't matter. So if you want to describe this market as being Microsoft and Sony, these two console makers, Microsoft loses every time, right? Is that true? Did they win one time? No, they lost every time. So the Microsoft, though, wants to phrase it as, well, actually, there's three companies in this market. And if you have three, we've always come in third, you know, so they kind of go back at like this economist was really taking this kind of view that like the market was just these two companies. And it's like, yeah, but hold on a second. The gaming market is this giant thing. These companies are like some slice of it. There's much more going on here than that.
But do you buy that the third console is a Nintendo Switch, really? I mean,
well, it's Nintendo full stop, right? Like,
yeah, because
what console? The Wii? What are you talking about? I mean, the Switch is
depends
not.
On the, it depends on the generation.
Yeah.
Well, because.
But these days, are, it's I mean, it's Xbox and PlayStation. It's not Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch.
Okay, well, like I said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you want to
Well, that's
it.
One of the debates, right? Isn't it?
If it's mm-hmm. Well, and that's the, I think we talked about this at one point about antitrust, one of the vaguenesses of antitrust is that you have to define the market that you're describing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you could describe it in any way. You know, if you want to say that Microsoft dominates the market for x86 based operating systems. Yeah, they do. But mm-hmm. is that the market that they compete in really? Because that market only really includes Linux now. Right. Yeah. You know, so they absolutely dominate that market. So for company or organizations like the FTC that are trying to make a point, they want to point at something like Xbox Cloud Gaming, which is game streaming, and say that's a market
like the UK and, as the UK did.
Yeah, and it is. It's a tiny market. If it's if you look at gaming as a pie, I mean it's a slice of the market that's so thin, like a pixel doesn't even, you know, overstates like how much share that thing has by volume or by revenue, right? It's just a small thing. It's tiny. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It was also, I guess, an embarrassing. I've never seen it. I want to see the actual transcript for this part of it. But the FTC asked so many stupid questions of Phil Spencer that he ended up having to explain to them how mergers work. Right. Which goes back to the editorial I wrote a week ago, where I said the FTC does not understand what its role is in antitrust. And I used the example of the EU competition committee to Marguerite Vestager, right, who spoke very eloquently to this topic about a week ago. She did that about a month ago. This applies very much to the FTC. You know, she basically said, look, some people think that being a regulator means that you just say no. And no, it's more complicated than that.
No, the job is to protect consumers, and that's it's for protecting consumers. Like, that is the gig. Yeah, so tell me how the consumer, you have to define the market to say, okay, these are the consumers. How would they be harmed?
Exactly. And I think that's how the FTC's case falls apart, because you really can't logically make that case.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, does Judge Corley get that too?
Yeah, exactly.
She's relatively new to the federal bench.
Right.
But she's always worked in California and in this space. So I got to think her experiences have been totally focused on all these deals should go through unless they can demonstrate harm.
Yeah. Yeah. And the FTC is trying to make the point that all we have to do is introduce any little bit of doubt, you know.
That might work on a jury. I can't imagine that working on a judge. Right.
I don't think so either. If you guys aren't reading Foss Patents, I strongly recommend doing so. Florian Miller has been doing an amazing job of covering this as well. But, you know, I think to me, the big kind of takeaway from the console market, if we go back a few years, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, mm-hmm. you said, you know, what's the big difference between like Sony and the PlayStation and Microsoft and Xbox? You know, I would have thought of these things as being very, very similar. Sony has pursued more of an exclusives kind of a strategy. Yep.
I think they always admire Nintendo.
Yeah.
Right. That has all of their own titles that never sell them to anybody else.
Yeah.
And owns their own little market. It is interesting to think there's two Japanese companies in the video game business and one American company. And it is the American government going after the American company. Like, wait.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It's sort of a sidetrack, but I've been reading a lot about the early history of the video game and early home computer markets. And the big mistake that Atari made was they never protected their initial console, the VCS, the 2600.
Yeah.
And so it gave rise to this notion of third-party developers who were people not at Atari creating games for the system. There were too many of them. It created the video game crash of 1983, blah, blah, blah. Everyone kind of knows that history.
Yeah.
But in 1985, Nintendo wanted to come to the United States with what was going to be called the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System.
I did. I sold a lot of them.
Yep. And learning from Atari, they said, well, we're going to protect this thing. And what we're going to ensure is that only we release content for this device. Third parties have to come through us. They get our seal of approval. Out it goes.
They controlled the developer kits. You had to apply to get the developer kit.
Right. And, you know, you could make the argument they kind of rescued the video game market. I think it was always going to come back, but
inevitably, whatever. But they were the ones who did it. I mean, I remember working a kiosk, literally getting pallet loads of NESs and
never got
to unload the pallet, just started handing them to go to the till.
That's exactly right.
As fact, as we could go.
I worked at a Toys R Us and I got a call one day from a guy who said, hey, I just came back from New York City. And I saw this Nintendo. Now, you got to remember, the name Nintendo at that time meant like nothing. It was like, I think it was maybe, did they make Donkey Kong and maybe Mario
they had
Brothers?
Arcade games. Yeah.
But they were nobody. So anyway, they had a video game system. This is what the guy said. I'll never forget this. He says, it comes with a gun that you can shoot at the TV and a robot that will play video games against you. And I said, sir, I think you're drinking. I've never heard of such a thing. That's crazy. And then 2 days later, we got these giant cages full of these things in. And that's what it was, basically. Yeah. Right. But
Duck Hunt.
Yeah. But the model that they created was the one we still have today.
Yeah.
Literally, they invented it. And it's, you know, this system where you have some kind of control over the console, right? So Xbox, Sony,
it's
whatever.
It's quality control, because in the end, you took a Nintendo game and put it in a Nintendo machine, and so it's Nintendo's fault if it sucks.
That's right. That's right. So they did a good job with
Atari
that.
Atari learned this because they allowed third parties. Instead of learning from Atari.
Atari was the...
Coincidentally, my whiskey story ties into this too.
I'm just going to give you a full loop back.
Stay tuned.
And I will also say, coincidentally, that the first third-party video game company of all time was, wait for it, Activision. Yeah, a group of four or five, I don't remember, ex-Atari.
Activision Adventure, I think. Right? Was that from Atari? Mm-hmm.
Well, Pitfall.
Pitfall, that's the one. What a great game.
They were tired of not having their games on the boxes, and they didn't understand why a game that made $2 million didn't give them a bonus.
Are they the only independent gaming company that's still kind of very active?
Still around?
Yeah.
I mean, they're all technically still around because there have been so many acquisitions.
Right. They just got rolled up, right?
It's the mark that they people buy the brand.
Well, I should say, I mean, not
the
all.
Brand
I
mean, many and, of them and the original around. Bits, right?
Like,
if anything, Gabe Newell and Steam rescued a lot of lost software closed out companies and put them in a place where you can get them for a buck a piece.
Right. So I've lost track of why we're talking about this. It's about exclusives, right? So this is the thing. So I would have said a few, even just a few years ago, I was kind of anti exclusives, right? To me, I feel like games should just be out in the world. Like they should be everywhere, right?
Yeah. And it's bad for consumers. It's good for the company, right? It sells hardware.
It's worked out
great
for Sony. It's worked out great for Nintendo. I still feel like Nintendo and Sony could still now do better. I don't understand why Nintendo doesn't release all of their classic games on the iPhone and the iPad. It just makes no sense to me. You have this classic library of games that people still want to play.
Yep.
But that's not the way they do things. So that's fine. Now, Microsoft has some exclusives, right? We know Gears of War, Halo, et cetera, but they've been slower to that. I think their game... studio buying binge has been based around kind of building up that exclusive thing. But one of the things that came out in this was that not only does Sony have exclusives that they only ship on their own console, they actually pay studios millions of dollars so that they will not ship their games on Xbox. That is incredible to me.
Well, I mean, isn't the root of this story Starfield? Because originally Starfield was going to be a PS5 only game.
And yes, this was one of the revelations.
Xbox only game.
That's right.
Yeah, they had Sony had successfully convinced Activision Blizzard to release two games only on Sony.
And really Bethesda, right?
And Bethesda.
That's why they bought Bethesda. Yes, right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, mixing
it up. Was it ZeniMax?
Starfield.
ZeniMax, which owned Bethesda, this is how these things happen, right? Which owned id Software, which, you know, it's like this. You know, these companies are still kind of in there, you know, they're maybe not the same as they were in the past.
But there was testimony that because they were so concerned about Starfield being an exclusive with Sony, they bought ZeniMax.
That's right. To prevent that from happening.
Amazing.
It's amazing. It's astonishing to me, though, that in this world, you could have a business practice that amounts to paying partners to not support a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that okay? How is that not anti-competitive? That's crazy. Microsoft at one point considered a strategy where they would outspend Sony so much that Sony would just go bankrupt. Like they literally considered just doing that to Sony all the time because they have infinite dollars and they could just buy up every game. And eventually they decided that was silly and they didn't do that. But because Sony is so predatory, they were like, how do we put a stop to this?
Well, you make the Xbox X $200.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. And you roll out Game Pass with all of the titles. Like, you can smash the market.
Yeah.
I would argue that's genuinely anti-competitive. That's dumping effectively.
Well, I would take the pro Microsoft argument and say it's a razor blade model, Richard.
I think it's a risk, though, that the judge. Yes, there's been a lot of.
You're right.
There's been a lot of evidence that, you know, maybe supports Microsoft here. But the judge might well say all he is are acting in your best interest and it's damaging the consumer. I mean, that's the case, right?
I think there's a strong case for the FTC coming out and saying in America, if the game is not available on all platforms, you can't ship the game.
Yeah.
Which would, by the way, be disastrous for Sony.
Oh, yeah. Not just Sony. Lots of small independent game developers who are developing for exclusives. That's a lot of extra work.
Arguments, One of my big issues with this FTC thing is that there's all this clear abuse going on in the game industry, and this is like who you chose to go after.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, whatever comes out of this, if the FTC wins or the FTC loses, Microsoft buys Activision Blizzard or doesn't, I don't think anyone's going after Sony.
No,
I don't think that happens.
That's one, by the way.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, that's one of the conclusions I drew from the 4 days of testimony so far.
But is he, is
Sony
the other
is
side
the worst.
They're the worst. And why isn't anyone going after them for this behavior?
Yeah.
What they are doing is crazy. And I mean, I think it's inarguably illegal, but that's just an opinion. Meanwhile, what we're worried about is like, what might Microsoft do? You know,
doesn't this really speak to an administration that is anti tech giant?
Yes. Yep.
And also is pro Japan because they're well positioned with relation to concerns around China. So you kind of don't want to mess with anything Japanese while you're trying to get some other things done over there. Like, I just wonder if there's some behind the scenes action here from.
I agree with you on this administration has a clear dictate to go after big tech. Mm-hmm. This is the barn door is already open. The horses are gone. I don't understand.
Oh, no. And it's the thing is, if you're going to use the courts, generally speaking, the courts look at the law and there's no law here.
Yeah. Go after the biggest abusers, you know, for starters. Microsoft is competing in a market here in which there isn't a serial abuser. That serial abuser has complained that Microsoft might, in fact, use its own strategy against it. And it doesn't like that. And somehow regulators and courts have said, that's a problem.
That
and
seems like, wrong.
What is happening?
So what the judge, though, is not going to be saying, I mean, he might be saying this in his head, but he's not going to be saying, Sony's the problem here. He's going to judge the case on the merits of the case.
Her,
sorry.
It's a woman, sorry.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
You're right. But I think that's
not the case before her is Sony's behavior.
So, right. No. But here's the thing. So I don't know the numbers.
I doubt she is doing what we're doing, which is saying, this is a case that Sony really brought. No.
I think logically she should be saying.
I know.
That.
Well, you and I know that.
What's the argument?
But it wasn't Sony. It was the FTC. And I think she has to act as if. This is not Sony's interest. That this isn't Sony saying, let's do something in our interest. She has to look at the case on the merits of the case, right? Mm.
Yes. And among the merits of the case is the fact that Microsoft competes in a market in which a serial abuser has run roughshod over this industry and done everything it can to disenfranchise Xbox.
Yeah.
Where Microsoft's whole thing has been, look, we just want games to be everywhere. We're not even asking for all of our games to be Xbox exclusives. I mean, there will be some. Of course there will. But even if, like, all but the biggest Activision Blizzard games somehow become Xbox exclusives, that pie chart where you show how many exclusives each company has, Nintendo and Sony are still way ahead.
Yeah.
You know? It's bizarre to me that they do this so much, and they're so concerned that Microsoft might do it with the two or three titles that have come up. They did it here.
This is my question is, can the judge look at that as a whole, or does the judge have to look at the FTC's specific filing against Microsoft and decide whether Microsoft is a problem? Can she say,
But that's part of the evidence. Yeah, I mean, this is part of evidence, right? This is the point of this testimony,
right?
That you see both sides of it. In other words, Sony says, look what they did. They bought this company. And they made two of the games, one of which is a piece of crap, Xbox exclusives. Oh, my God. Can you believe how badly they're behaving?
Yeah, but Sony's not on trial here, right?
No. But that's the testimony. I know that. Microsoft says, yes, but this is apparently very common in this industry. Look how many games Sony has made an exclusive. By the way, Sony has paid publishers money to keep more games off of our console than we have paid publishers to keep them only on our console. Like, what are we talking about here?
Remediation here too. It's like, just say you won't do that.
Exactly.
Exactly. Commit to it.
But I'm not sure how this kind of hearing in a civil case differs from, but you can't as a criminal defendant say, but everybody else is doing it. Isn't a defense, right? So I don't know if that's the case in this. It might be.
I don't either. I mean, honestly. That's right. I mean, no one has suggested that this behavior is illegal in this courtroom, right? Yeah.
I don't know. It's not an illegality issue. It's an antitrust issue.
Right. It's an issue. Well, it's basically just about educating people about how this market works. Yeah. Right. So Microsoft has tried to compete in its own way. I mean, good, bad, indifferent, whatever. Sony has done their own thing. They've obviously been enormously successful. You know, the net result is that Microsoft has come in third place. Microsoft knows it needs to make some changes. It's also missed out on some things, right? It hasn't, it doesn't have what I think the term he used, Phil Spencer called it an organic strategy for mobile, meaning they really haven't gone after mobile. They released a handful of silly games, here and there, but, you know, they've looked at acquisitions to solve this problem. It's kind of the typical big company solution, right? They actually considered buying over 100 different companies to try to figure this out. One of them was Square Enix, right? And one of the things they wanted to do with that company was get into Asia, because they also don't do well in Asia. But but create a mobile native Game Pass offering, meaning native mobile games that you would download to your device and use as part of a subscription, just like we have on PC and console today. That's one thing they've considered. That's not happening.
I mean, the problem with buying Square Enix is they make Final Fantasy.
Right.
Exclusively for Sony.
Sure. The Final Fantasy, the Call of Duty of video games.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. I thought Call of Duty was the Call of Duty of video games.
That was my joke. I have I'll be right back. I apologize.
Okay. Paul's leaving. I worry about it sounds like Microsoft's defense is we're doing this defensively. Like, well, we have to, Your Honor, because these other guys are so predatory. We have to be predatory. And I just wonder if the judge...
Well, I don't think they would use that language.
But isn't that kind of what they're saying?
No, by the way, it's literally what they're saying, but they can't say predatory, right?
No, in other words. But I think they're trying to emphasize this is the way it's done in this business. But I don't think that makes it legal.
That's exactly right.
And I wonder what the judge's purview is. If she is allowed to say, yeah, you know, if you're going to succeed in this business, you have to be a jerk.
Okay. No, but
and it's okay. No, no, it's, go ahead, it, be look, a jerk. The, I don't think she's going to do that.
She might say
Sony and Nintendo are not on trial here. You are. We should deal with Sony. Yes, but that's not the case in front of me right now. Is that possible?
We are competing in a market in which our competitors don't just release exclusives, but they literally pay companies not to release products for our platform.
Right.
What we want to do is mostly release cross-platform games and reserve a couple of those games for ourselves. The biggest games, Call of Duty, et cetera, we will have explicit agreements to always bring cross-platform to everybody, anyone who wants it. And they've done it. They've already proven this. They've made those deals.
Is their argument, we're the good guys here? And you should.
It is literally where the good guys. Yeah. Yep.
Well.
Yep.
And are also aggrieved in the sense that the line we bought Bethesda because Sony was trying to pay them to make Starfield a PS5 exclusive.
Right. Right. Exactly. And now Sony, a company that has paid other companies not to ship products on our platform, is now complaining that we are doing that with one game.
But again, the complaint isn't coming from Sony. You and I know it is, but it's not from the judge's point of view.
Okay,
it's coming
from the Federal
Trade Commission. Okay. So she's not allowed to say, oh, yeah, this is Sony's action. It's not.
Sure.
Yeah. But Microsoft has the FTC has to prove harm.
Yes.
And, you know,
but it can be, no it harm. Can prove, that's the question. I mean, it could prove harm absent any knowledge about Sony's.
Well, we have to look at it kind of a net. So we want to look at this really narrowly, just very narrowly. Say, does Microsoft only releasing Starfield on Microsoft platforms indicate some form of consumer harm? And you'd have to say, yeah, because they're not releasing it cross platform. This game might have been cross platform before.
And it's expected to be an incredibly hot title.
Yep. So you're like, wow. Oh, there you go.
We have shown harm, right?
Yeah. But that's not it, right? It's bigger than this one game. Activision Blizzard makes all these other games too. And Bethesda, ZeniMax, whatever we have. What do we actually do with our games? What have we done? The vast majority of games that Microsoft publishes are available. Well, that's not actually, I can't even say that. I'm sorry.
That's not true.
Actually, what I was about to say is not true. But the vast majority of games that we've gotten through big studio acquisitions, which is basically just ZeniMax, are still cross-platform. We haven't taken the majority of them and made them Xbox exclusives. We haven't done that. We have done a few.
This is so tricky because there are plenty of other industries. You know, Ford does not make an F-150 for Chevrolet.
Yeah.
If every single Ford vehicle is exclusive to Ford, every single Chevrolet vehicle is exclusive to Chevrolet.
But it's more complicated. So we can't use that example. Because
why not?
Third parties creating content that goes to these platforms, right? In other words, it's not, it'd be like a windshield wiper maker, you know. Do they only supply, did Ford pay this windshield wiper maker some fee not to ship their windshield wipers on GM?
Would that be a problem? I don't think so.
I don't, well,
and I think you can make the economic argument that it's costly and inefficient to make it for many platforms. So it's not unreasonable for something to be only on Xbox or only on PlayStation.
Right.
That's a reasonable economic decision.
Right. So Microsoft's central argument, everyone focuses on the big stuff, right? So the big thing here is Call of Duty. And Microsoft has reached very explicit agreements with that. They've also been very explicit when they've talked about it and said, look, economically, it doesn't make any sense for us to restrict the access to this game. We want to expand the access to this game. And they would do it in ways that Activision Blizzard on its own has not done, including putting it on Xbox Game Pass and Xbox Cloud Gaming, right? That's something Activision just has shown no interest in. They make plenty of money on this title. They like what they're doing. They're not interested in that stuff. Microsoft would be interested in doing that, but those things would not outweigh the money that they make for putting it on the PlayStation, right?
Look,
the PlayStation
if you really wanted a fair playing field, you would restrict the platform makers from making games at all. Sony shouldn't make games. Microsoft shouldn't make games. They should all be made by third-party entities. Well, and then they could act economically in their interest, irrespective of the platform makers. That would be the right solution, right?
But that's not a solution to this case. This case is limited to...
Right. That's the problem. What is an untenable situation already.
That's right.
Which is that platform makers are also in the business of content.
Well, but this is, you know, we just talked about Atari briefly. I mean, Atari kind of invented, they weren't the first one with a cartridge.
Nintendo did what they had to do because they had to protect their quality.
But they popularized this notion of, we created this box that you buy and you put in your living room, and then we make these little boxes that you plug into them and you play those games. And that was, they were like the
there's a very famous
Kleenex of that market. They
were
Atari.
Very famous antitrust case. The movie companies owned the theaters. And this was similar. The theaters are the platforms. The content is the films. And it was a big issue because they had content exclusives and so forth. The courts decided that they should divest the theaters, that the movie companies couldn't own theaters. I think that's a direct analogy.
But there's another part to this, which is that our market is evolving. We're going away from buying discrete games into subscription models.
Right.
The same way that we've seen consolidation at Netflix and Disney. And so gaming's headed this way, it would be problematic to put in regulation that impairs the evolution of a market.
Right. And there's also this notion of market size because, again, if the gaming market overall is this giant thing, I mean, what slice is console gaming, right? PCs, I believe by revenue, have just surpassed console gaming revenues this past year or this year will. But they're both eclipsed by a dramatic amount by mobile gaming, casual gaming, that kind of thing. So when you have companies that primarily play in this console space, I'm sure they're looking, you can see what they've done. Sony and Microsoft have both made inroads in PC gaming. Both of them have been slow to make inroads in mobile gaming, and that's where the real growth is. Microsoft's approach is very Microsoft-centric. When you're a hammer, everything's a nail. We have a big cloud business. I wonder how we could get into mobile. Oh, I know. We'll do cloud gaming stuff. That's how we'll do it. They don't do the organic gaming, as Phil Spencer said. I think they should. I think Nintendo should, by the way. I think Sony should, too. And when you're a big company, one of the ways you do that is to acquire studios that do that, right? I mean, that's part of the strategy behind this Activision Blizzard acquisition.
Mobile gaming from a business model is pretty problematic, right? It's a much more predatory business space. The game, you can't charge much for the games up front. There's no concept of subscription model.
Yep, it's so, a different thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you're basically giving away the game and then psychologically manipulating people to pay for stuff that doesn't, that makes them play more.
So,
I would argue it's fine when there's a whole bunch of little companies making these horrible games. But as soon as there's a big company doing it,
I'll give you a good example. Activision Blizzard makes Diablo 4, which is a very hot game, came out a couple of weeks ago, and I played Diablo 4. Right at the front page, it says, you know, if you really want the full experience, you need to subscribe to Microsoft Game Pass. Otherwise, you won't be able to.
It says Microsoft Game Pass, really?
Yes. Otherwise, you won't be able to play against head-to-head. You won't see other players at all. That you need to at least have a games with gold.
Oh, I see. For the multiplayer stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yes, you can play. But the way they phrase it is, you can play all by yourself and lonely, or get a Microsoft subscription, and things will be much better. I wish I'd taken a screenshot of that for you.
One of the big pushbacks.
It worked, by the way.
These days,
I got my Microsoft Game Pass because of it, so it worked.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one of the things that people have pushed back a lot over the past couple of years is these like loot boxes and other kind of pay to win type situations.
Yeah, Diablo's EU's been all over that
game. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just, you know, Richard was, I think, was talking about this notion that you get these games for free and they figure out these psychological ways to pay for things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird when you have a game like Call of Duty or Diablo or whatever it might be, where you actually pay $70 for that thing and then get to pay.
They still
more.
Do that.
You know, it's not even free up front. Now, of course, I think they justify that by saying, look, it cost $1 billion, whatever the figure is, to hundreds of millions of dollars to create this game. It's it's more investment than like Flappy Bird or whatever.
The real argument is you want this game, don't you? What will the market bear? $60, $70?
No problem. I mean, I was a big Call of Duty guy for a long time, and I watched as this evolved.
That makes me sad when I hear you say I was a big.
I could say, you never know, but I'm looking into a. I'll talk about that. Anyway, so there's a. Call of Duty in the beginning was really about, it was a single player experience. It was like you were going to war. And then they started doing multiplayer, and that got really big, and it was interesting. And then over time, they were like, oh, we can make more money if we ship like levels over time, and we could do these like drops. And now we have like a season's pass. So you pay $60 for the game and $60 so to cover you for the rest of the year. And then they saw like what was happening with like Battle Royale type games like Fortnite. And they were like, all right, here we go. All right. So we're also going to do that. Like by the time you get like to modern day, like what is Call of Duty? It's like this giant octopus of like different ways to spend money.
Revenue streams.
And,
yeah.
It's crazy. And that's, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's a natural evolution. I don't know. But, anyone who plays Call of Duty today would be well served to go back and install the original Call of Duty and just see how horrifically, hilariously different it is.
Yeah.
And how simple
it's true
it
of
is,
Diablo, you know? Too. Yeah. The original Diablo.
Well, and therein lies the real push for you to get online, quote unquote, online. It's not to play with more people, it's for them to be able to pitch you offers constantly.
Yeah.
And to have, and to have
you
your
can't
payment
have loot boxes
in place
without online. Right. Yeah.
Without online and without a credit card in place, all of which you need to do to get Game Pass. So you get all that done so that when I catch you in that Skinner box moment, in that moment where you need to gamble,
we have a card
you
number.
Just have to click the button and it happens. Yeah. I've got your money. I don't have to ask for a car. I don't have to do any of that.
So it was a mutual benefit society because it was Xbox Live, by the way, but five bucks a month. And I looked at it. Well, for a few extra, I could get, anyway. It's a mutual benefit because, Activision Blizzard knows Microsoft's going to be maybe our owner. Let's do something nice for them. And we can do loot boxes or you can buy nice, outfits. And by the way,
who makes Diablo?
You know who makes Diablo? Activision Blizzard.
Oh, no. All I know is they make Call of Duty. They make other games, you say.
Yes. Have you ever heard of World of Warcraft? It's a fun game.
Yeah, vaguely. It sounds like a,
I got to tell you, I happily played Dredge beginning to end in 10 hours.
Yeah.
I immediately played it again.
Yeah.
Wow.
I miss those days with games like that. But
just a good little story game, all self-contained, no multi-user, no loot boxes, just a great story.
Diablo, and I think this is, Diablo is crack. I mean, they're clearly selling something that it's like a slot machine. And it's
This is the Skinner box. You know, B.F. Skinner was the psychologist that taught us how this works.
And I'm happily, I'm happily. Oh,
you're banging away on the button, man. You're banging away on the button.
It's a fun game. I've played every one of them. And
but now that you got Game Pass, they wired that button to your credit card. So keep slamming.
So now we understand how gambling has taken over sports, because it's happened in esports first.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, this is the market that Microsoft finds itself in, right?
And things wants to have be changed. Further in.
Well, I mean, over 20 years ago, they entered this console market. I mean, think about how different things were back then. Sega still made hardware.
Yeah.
Right? Sony had established itself, obviously, with the first PlayStation, and then the PlayStation 2 was the biggest thing in the world. And Nintendo was always a thing, right? Nintendo's had a few missteps, but they've always had this kind of little slice of the market. Not little. They've had a big slice of the market that is just kind of uniquely them, the Disney of video gaming, whatever it is. I think Microsoft was still riding the Windows model works kind of high at that time. How can we apply this to video game hardware? They based the first one on a PC architecture. We'll bring in all, you know, the Windows PC game makers, and they can put titles on this thing pretty easily. Yada, yada, yada. But, you know, flash forward, 20 years plus, it's, they're coming last. So
now, one of the stories I really liked from this whole thing was this, that Kotick threatened to pull Call of Duty from Xbox.
This is astonishing. Yeah.
It's like, I've never heard that before. Yeah, you talk about stuff that comes out of these trials.
So that actually ties into that, that conversation we had a little bit earlier.
Save this if you would, because we need to take a break. And this would be a good thing to make
this
people.
This will be the segue.
Let's do a little loot box for Leo. It's Leo's loot box time. If you want that story, you're going to have to stay tuned through this ad.
I've got a Patreon if you guys want to.
yeah, sure. The podcast is free. Just attach your credit card and no salespeople will call. No, our show today brought to you by Lookout. It's something you do want to know. If you are running a business, you know business has really changed. And I think it's forever. Boundaries to where we work, how we work, have completely disappeared. And by the way, when employees are on the move, your data and your is on the move too, whether on a device or even in the cloud or across networks or at a local coffee shop. This is the new world of work, and that's great. Your workforce loves it, right? But your IT security folks may be saying, ay, yay, yay. Pity the poor IT security folks. You know, they have multi-point tools. They're legacy solutions. They're struggling to keep up with everything that's changing. They need Lookout. Lookout lets you control your data and free your workforce. You know, best of both worlds. With Lookout, you gain complete visibility into all your data, minimize risk from internal and external threats, plus ensure compliance. And by seamlessly securing hybrid work, your organization doesn't have to sacrifice productivity for security. Everybody wins, including IT, because instead of a complex multi-tool solution, they've got a single unified platform, Lookout. It reduces IT complexity and gives you and your team more time to focus on whatever else is coming your way. And believe me, there's stuff coming your way. Good protection. It shouldn't be a cage. It should be a springboard, letting you and your organization bound into the future of your making. Visit lookout.com today to learn how to safeguard data, secure hybrid work, and reduce IT complexity. That's lookout.com. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. We really appreciate that, and you support us when you go to lookout.com and try it out. Try it out. Paul Thurrott, Richard Campbell. Richard's off getting tea, as he often does at this time.
My Pixel Fold arrived, Leo.
Oh, wow, wait a minute. Hold her up. Let's see it. You ordered that, huh? Or is it a review unit?
No, I ordered this. I wish.
$1,800?
Yeah, not if everything all in, it was like $1,900.
A lot of people are saying when they first get it, oh, it's not quite like I thought it would be. Like, it's more square,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
It's more like a Duo.
I didn't like the way the Samsung ones were so tall and thin.
Yeah,
I feel like the outside of this will be a more normal.
It's a full screen on the outside screens. That would be almost like a phone. So it doesn't even look that thick. Actually, it looks kind of nice.
Yeah.
Now, you saw Ron Amadio over at Ars Technica His, yes, I did. His died in 4 days because it got a grit or something in the, there's a little space between the plastic screen protector and the actual OLED screen.
Well, I'm sure he didn't spend any of his own money on that. So
no. Yeah. But you did on yours. So I want you to take care.
I did.
Yeah.
I sure did.
Yeah. Wow. I'm interested that you bought that.
Were you? I've never had any interest in a folding phone yet. And I think it was just kind of that my wife has interest in a folding phone. And I think
but I would have thought the flip would have been more her speed.
I would have thought the same, but my wife said, no, I want the
she
other
wants
thing.
A big screen.
Said, well, let me give it a shot. And
so this is really going to be her phone if you approve.
Well, if we, I mean, we'll see. She uses a Samsung, whatever, Ultra, something, something.
I have the Ultra.
We'll see.
20,
we'll see.
2, 23, whatever the latest Ultra is.
23.
You know what?
It's interesting.
I am in a conundrum right now because I bought some, and they're really nice, Denon earbuds. Remember there was a Kickstarter, a company in Australia called Neura, and they were going to make these earbuds that were super high fidelity and had software that would measure your ear automatically, like a hearing test. So they got bought by Masimo, which owns the Denon brand, along with Polk Audio and Barnes and Noble, Bowers and Wilkin. Very similar. Anyway,
Microsoft might have been part of that.
Denon released this Neura earbuds. Now they call it the Denon Pearl Personal Listening, and I got the Pearl Pro. But to really use this earbud, you need the latest aptX codec. It supports not only aptX HD and low latency, but aptX lossless, which is very high bandwidth Bluetooth.
So you do like Tidal and whatever else.
Yeah, and in theory, you could have high bitrate music. It's only in theory because I cannot find a single product that, even though this has been out for a year, supports aptX lossless.
aptX lossless.
If you ever see one, let me know.
When you say a product, you mean, in other words, you should be able to do it from a phone.
You would think the iPhone would know. It doesn't support aptX
at
all.
No, I
wouldn't
think
the Pixel would know. You'd think Samsung S23 being on the Snapdragon platform would. It supports.
I know Snapdragon supports it. I know they contribute.
They don't want to pay the license
for
lossless.
They might have even invented it.
They don't want to pay the license for lossless. So it supports, I think, HD, but not lossless. No, I'm not. I think it doesn't even do HD.
Do you have to get, can you get like a DAC or something that does it?
You can get a DAC.
I guess it wouldn't matter.
There, Fios sells a $1,000 DAC that does it. It's it's not just a DAC. It's like a
So you have these headphones or earbuds over there that won't
well, they work fine, but they won't do their best with. So I want to review it, but I kind of want to find an aptX lossless device.
Sorry, are they earbuds or headphones?
They're earbuds. They make headphones too, like that. So but these are earbuds. They're really nice.
It would be weird to pair earbuds with a really expensive home theater or like a home stereo.
Yeah, I was thinking of doing that, buying a little Bluetooth codec.
That might be the only way to do it.
I think I have to. There are aptX lossless, you know, standalone stereo.
I can't
codecs.
Believe that no device does this. I wonder if it's a battery life issue.
No, I think it's a license fee issue. It's fairly new. It came out last year.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I was just thinking that. So I'd love, if you want to do a review of that phone for us, we would love that.
Oh.
He's got the new, Richard, you might have missed this. He just got the new Pixel Fold. From Google.
Yeah. And the only issue I'm surprised because, you know, weird.
If I'm not going to hold on to this, I have to get rid of it before we go to Mexico next week.
Yeah, you only have a little time to return.
The next few days will be telling.
Focused.
I'm still very suspicious of the durability of folding OLED screens.
And I would be suspicious of anything hardware that Google makes, especially a V1 product.
I have the Galaxy Fold about a generation, two generations ago. I have the flip phone, which I really liked. But I never used them long enough to know if those OLEDs would hold up.
Right, right. No, it's a concern. There are people like that guy from Mars Technica that have a problem on day one. There are people who have used them continually and have never had issues.
Yeah, Ron might just have had bad luck, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sometime next month, Samsung's going to announce the new Fold and Flip.
Yep.
I'll probably buy a Flip.
I think the little one is interesting, too. They're not going to be able to change the form. They're not understood to be changing the form factor on the big one.
No, but on the flip, they're going to have a bigger screen on the outside screen.
Yeah, I think that looks cool. I think that's neat.
I know. That looks like a good phone.
I like it.
I'll probably get that one. But I would love to know if you, even a thumbnail review. You know, we're bringing back hands-on technology in the club. And next time you do hands, are you going to do hands-on Windows before you go to Mexico?
Yeah, we're doing one more tomorrow.
If you want to do a two-minute, it could be like a first look, not a real review, but here's what it looks like. Here's my thoughts. We would love that. We'll put that in hands-on technology. Thank you.
Sure.
That's and part of it is, you know, we canceled All About Android. We don't have an Android show anymore.
Yeah,
so
that's too bad, yeah.
Just, you know, the audience had been going down for 3 or 4 years. And I wonder if it's a reflection on Android that
interesting.
Not that Android's still like the best selling platform.
Best selling phone.
But I don't
phones
think,
have not been innovative for a while.
I think it's bad enough with iPhone users. I think they've kind of lost interest, but at least they're somewhat interested. But Android people, it's just it's a tool, it's a device. They don't want to listen to a
and
podcast.
So the issue that
Google addressed this during Google I.O. because someone asked them, I don't remember who it was, but someone behind the scenes kind of said, hey, it didn't seem like the Android stuff was all that interesting. You know, Apple does this big bang thing every year. And they basically said, look, you know, Apple ships new hardware every year with their OS and they only ship it to themselves.
Right.
So it makes sense for them
to use platforms.
Yeah. Google does what Microsoft's doing with Windows, which is
everybody can use quarterly
updates. They have monthly updates. Yeah. They improve it throughout the year. So the big bang thing is like it's really more of a soft rollout. Like when Android releases Android 14 this year, it doesn't make any difference. Nobody's getting it.
How many more cameras did you want?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're on Samsung, it's like, you might get it in the next 5 months. You know, it's not like when you release iOS, everyone gets it immediately.
Maybe it's a marketing thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Phones have been slabs of black glass for 15 years.
I think that's part of it.
How excited are you going to be?
Why I'm excited about this, because it's two slabs of black glass.
Yes. with a delicate connection between them, it's very likely to fail you.
And some weird plastic that bends. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Everything's going to be fine.
I really am curious about it, though. Thank you for getting it. 1,800 schmackers.
Yeah. That's a lot of money for a phone. Jeez. It's better cool dance.
But they do have a liberal return policy, and they have good training.
Yeah, they do.
Samsung really wants you, or Google really wants you to try it anyway. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, you got to tell me this 30% revelation about.
Loot box is about to open.
Okay. So tying back to the early conversation about markets and sizes of markets and whatnot. So one of the problems with the gaming market is because people will bring this up all the time. Like consoles like Xbox, PlayStation, etc. 30% VIG on top of goes to the maker of the platform. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, how can you complain about Google and Apple charging the same arbitrary amount on their platform? And the reason is those mobile platforms are exponentially bigger than the console market. It's not even close. And gaming is disproportionately a big deal when it comes to mobile app stores. I don't remember the figures. I'm just talking here, but some 80 something percent probably of revenues that go through with the mobile app stores is all games. So it's a big deal. That's a much bigger market. But even within the smaller confines of the console market, what you find is big publishers like Activision go to Microsoft in this case and say, hey, we want more money. We want more of the money. We want a better revenue split. So they ask for 80-20. And they don't just give that to everybody, but they threatened to pull Call of Duty off of Xbox if Microsoft didn't agree. And obviously with a title that big, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's Activision Blizzard. It's Call of Duty. You're going to say yes. So they do that sometimes. It would be interesting to know if Sony has ever been forced to do that. I don't know. This is Sony's not on trial. We don't know. But that is an interesting circumstance, you know, that's how big Activision Blizzard is, you know. I think if Microsoft does acquire Activision Blizzard, the first thing they should go back to Sony and demand an 80-20 split. You know, we'll keep it on there like we promised. But well, actually, I guess they couldn't force it if they already promised to keep it on there. But
you knew this was guaranteed money, right? Like this game sells $1 billion plus.
Oh, yeah. No, it hits $1 billion faster than the biggest Hollywood blockbusters of all time. That's what's unique about Call of Duty in the gaming industry, how much bigger it is than Hollywood.
I mean, it's actually justified. Now, it's really hard for Microsoft to cry poor. Like, that's a tough thing to do.
Well, speaking of being poor, so one of the questions that came up during this these hearings was whether or not Xbox was profitable. I've long argued that Xbox has never been profitable. We do know, because I actually Phil Spencer said it in the context of these hearings, that the goal is always to make money eventually on hardware. Microsoft has never done that. Sony and Nintendo do make a profit on their hardware, sometimes right from the get-go, which is astonishing. Microsoft's goal is to cost reduce over time and try to lose less and hopefully make money at the end. I think they would have done it with the Xbox 360, except for that Red Ring of Death issue they had and the billion plus, warranty recall. Well, we're not calling it a recall, whatever it was, free warranty repairs. But they've never done it. So Phil Spencer said regarding profitability that Microsoft expects the business to be profitable. Never actually said that it was. But he explained that them coming in third every single console generation is, in fact, what kicked off them buying all these game studios in this bid to make the business profitable. It's Sony's predatory behavior in many ways is what led to this, because Sony was outspending it on exclusives and was going further, like I said, by ensuring that certain games would not appear on Xbox.
I mean, this seems like an open and shut case, but this whole thing has been an open and shut case.
I know.
Right. Like, I did get the sense that Spencer forced this move to get in front of a judge, because the judge will follow the law. And I suspect that they had a sense all along that the FTC is low on qualified people right now. And you throw in some general hostility to tech giants. And so that's why the dumb was going on. But the law's the law.
It's a tough one. I really do feel like big tech needs to be regulated. I really do. And there are some movements afoot to retroactively remove acquisitions from big tech companies. The EU might try to take away DoubleClick, what it used to be, DoubleClick, from Google. They're actually going after their ad business. Incredible.
Yeah.
There's been talk about taking away Instagram and WhatsApp from Facebook, right? These are nuclear war type events. I mean, it's incredible. So, we'll see. But I just looking at this market in particular, looking at this case in particular, I feel like there's been this one super predatory company and they're not on trial for some reason. and I don't understand it. I know it's the FTC and not Sony, but we're basically protecting Sony. This is the harm, because there is no consumer harm. Especially given the promises that Microsoft has made. Phil Spencer put up the sense that I will swear in court that I will put out Call of Duty on PlayStation. I'm not sure what it is you want me to do. I will do whatever you ask.
Again, I feel like it's almost like hangover from the pandemic you lost a bunch of qualified people that actually know how to deal with this. Sure. And so there's sort of an irrationality going on. But it'll probably. Best thing to do is get a judge involved.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the deadline, because I think we're recording this on the 28th. It's 3 days away.
So everyone has this. It's funny. I always equate this with there were rumors a month or so ago that Samsung was considering using Bing as their search engine on their phones. And everyone's an expert. The whole world said, wait a minute, Samsung can't do that. We know that one of the requirements of the Android license is that they have to use Google search, which I just would probably, first of all, Samsung is probably bigger than every other Android phone maker combined.
Yeah, they're
You don't think they have an 80-20 split? You're telling me they can't do
whatever they want? Little leverage? Yeah.
Yeah. So no one actually knows, right? So in this case, we have all these facts. We know that Microsoft's fiscal year is ending on June 30th, like I said, in two days. We know that Microsoft has until July, I think it's 18th, to sign this deal. And if they don't, they owe Activision some amount of money. I think is it $3 billion or some kind of a breakup fee, whatever the amount is, so billions of dollars, right? So we know this is at stake. And we know that if this judge allows this to actually go to before a jury case, that can't even begin talking about that until the end of August, right? So we know these things. But here's the thing. When you start looking into this.
Giving Bally Kotick $3 billion is repugnant.
Like, yeah, of course it is.
Incredibly
repugnant. But think about it from, well, first of all, let's just say this. So this judge that is seeing this case today could rule on this as soon as next week. So it's not going to happen this week. So that's one thing. So, but we're still ahead of that July, whatever. I think it's July 18th deadline. So if the judge throws out the FTC case, like we said last week, I think Microsoft finalizes this acquisition.
Well, what about the UK?
They can spin in the wind.
Yeah.
Suck it, UK. Yeah. What would they do? Would they just withdraw from the market?
No. Well, I suspect what Microsoft
said. They let them sue them.
Hey, we're going ahead with this. Right. How would you like me to support your consumers?
Yeah, exactly. You tell us what you need us to do because we're doing it.
We're going ahead.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if you're actually concerned about consumers or whatever it is, competition, whatever, let us know. We'll figure that out. We're doing it. I think they just say screw the UK.
I think that July 18, this seems way more feasible then. Because if it was literally the next 2 days.
However, let's say the judge says, no, you know what? I think the FTC's made a good enough case. I think this needs to go to the full jury.
Then we're in trouble. Yeah.
Well, that's part of the schedule. That's part of the schedule discussion. So everyone knows, like, oh, I guess Microsoft's going to lose all this money. Does Activision just walk away? No, actually, you know, they can renegotiate this, right? I mean, this is an acquisition. It's a merger. They can renegotiate it. So it might make, I think it would make more sense. Microsoft, look, has Microsoft shown itself to be serious about this acquisition? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
At the 11th hour, they are defending themselves in court. They have flown out all their highest level executives
biggest involved guns. In this.
Yep.
And forced this case in the first place. Like, this all a play to do it seriously. This is
so
good faith negotiation by definition.
Right. So Activision could remain as it is. It could get another $3 billion if that's the figure. And it could continue on its own if it wants, or just wait it out and you'll get $70 billion.
Yeah.
You know? So my guess is they renegotiate and they try to ride it out and see what happens. Right. Yeah. And by the way, the way you handle that negotiation is to say, look, we're still going to pay you this fee if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's just, we'll just roll out the date now. In other words, let's forget about the date, but we're going to keep fighting this. We're spending a ton of money on this, by the way. I hope we've shown we're really serious. And if it, if it fails in the end, I mean, we'll give you that money.
I also wonder about what harassment lawsuits and so forth have been sort of put aside if Kotick was going to step down, if he's staying in place.
Well, you know, that's why Bobby is urgently.
Yeah. Selling. Bobby had it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let me take the billion and run.
Yeah. Yeah. And so really, this deal going through probably exposes him to some other jeopardies.
That's a really interesting point. I didn't even think of.
I mean, he's a good guy and a clean guy. I don't.
You know what he should do? Problems? I think this is a great strategy. Run for president, then he can pardon himself.
Yes. There you go.
It's a great strategy.
There's no such thing as self-pardon. Self-pardon's not a thing. I do not live in your country, but I know that much.
It's not a part. It's not a thing
pretty,
yet,
I think it's
Richard.
It's pretty clearly outlined. I think there's some folks who wrote that down. Just saying.
Pardon me.
We amend those things. We can amend those things.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure you can get 30 something states on board.
For people who don't know, Activision Blizzard had a horrific climate for especially for women, but for anybody who wasn't a white bro, and. Kotick was absolutely new and was involved, and there have been lawsuits.
He's one of the original bros.
Yeah. I was going to say, he has been involved in that. Look him up. He's been there since almost the beginning. Yeah. He's been there forever.
You know, I have to say, I just finished. You told me for a long time to read this, the Doom book. And you're right. It was a great read.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, I've now downloaded and installed Doom on my Nintendo Switch.
That's what it does, right?
Yeah, so it makes vintage. You want to play those games again and Quake and that's all of that. And I understand why it's a boys' club, because that's who gamers were back, 1992. There were women.
Yeah, they were living in a dorm room, essentially, on pizza and Diet Coke.
It was a frat.
They were up all night living
Joel
together.
Cola.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I could see how it got that way. And I also am a strong believer that adding other people with other experiences, women, people of color and so forth to the team makes a better game, makes it more diverse, right, makes it a better game.
Or certainly a more diverse group of games, yeah, right, overall, however you choose to do it.
And by the way, Blizzard's problems with Diablo 4, I've read articles about how, you know, some of the characters were really a little bit, and they had women on the team who said, no. No. You can't do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they really had to tone it down a little bit.
Yeah, that is. We did that show. We did a show on this topic on .NET Raw specifically about it's really? Not that you test your stuff with a diversity of people. It's that you need a diverse development
from beginning. Right. But I also understand how that didn't happen because.
Yeah.
But gaming's changed. You know, more than half of gamers are women now. It's not.
Well, they're trying to be better, but there's a lot of recovery to be done.
Yeah. It was how it started. So it's deeply ingrained in it. And I think you get the feeling that people like Carmack and Romero, how they think it had to be done, right?
But they've also stepped back.
They have
time for
now.
Cody to step back too.
Yes, I agree.
New generation that's different.
You know, Brianna Wu's going to be on Twit on Sunday. And of course, she was one of the focuses of Gamergate. So I'd be very interested. Mm-hmm. To her about
all
of this.
She knows the whole story. I've read a bunch of her stuff. Like, she went through a lot.
Poor woman. Yeah, she had to move.
Terrible.
I mean, yeah. And she's,
What I hear in Call of Duty is horrific. I can't even imagine what it would be like to be a woman.
Oh, yeah.
In this situation. My God.
Why would you play that?
What's wrong with the planet? You know, it's terrible.
But she's a serious gamer. There are a lot of women serious gamers.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the day, Stevie Case, who was Romero's girlfriend for a long time.
Yep. Beat him playing Doom one
beat
time.
Beat him. Famously. And women would come. I remember there was one anecdote where they wanted to do a Quake tournament for women. And Romero said, or Carmack, somebody said, oh, yeah, well, you get maybe 50 people. They got 1,500 signups. And it's because the industry really thinks it's this, you know, this bro culture.
Sure.
They think they knew who plays you. Yeah. I hope they've learned. Yeah. They're pockets of resistance.
Sure.
Oh, wow. All right.
We did FTC in an hour. I think I called it.
That wasn't bad. Not bad. So you think next week, maybe it'll be before the show. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, we're doing a show. So. Now, there's the 4th of July in the United States. You may not know about this, but Richard, but we do.
It's a loud noise. It's a loud noise that happens.
We blow some stuff up to celebrate the fact that we kicked the English out. Actually, we sent them up north, I think.
We did. You did. And we came down and burned your White House down a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't nice, I got to say, but I forgive you.
You burned down York first. We came and returned.
That's true.
Finger.
Good point. And what a mighty fire it did make.
It's all water under the bridge.
We will do a show on July 5th, though.
And I won't be there. I'll be in the air on the way to Montana to fish.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Like a fly fisherman.
I do not. I am not thrilled.
You look like a river runs through you. I mean,
listen, I'm much more of a fish for food, and this is fishing for mud.
Well, who's doing this? Why are you doing it?
This is a group of friends of mine, including certain Microsoft folks I'm not going to name.
I think that would be so much fun. Do you get waiters on?
I am. No, no.
I know at least one of them.
Listen,
I know that.
this is the luxury version of this. This is drift boat fly fishing. Oh. So you sit in a boat with a friend of yours. The guide's in the middle.
Drinking a lot of Molsons. Yeah, I know.
We drift down the river. He provides the gear. He rigs the lines. He tells you where to cast. That's what you've got to do. You need to know where to put it down where he says to put it down, and you will catch a terrible tasting trout, which you're not allowed to keep. You then take a picture with it, then you put it back. Sure. Repeat 60 times until you want to die.
That does not sound fun. I'm going to be honest with you.
It's a lot.
I've done this on the ocean and it's terrible.
Yeah.
Except actually you can keep those fish.
Yeah. No, but the thing is fishing. I fish on the ocean all the time. Like that's food. It's a practical thing, right? I have my license.
It's still not a great way to spend a day.
You know, it's my whole goal when I'm fishing salt is to be back by lunch. Right. With two springs, two cohos, a rock cod, a halibut, if I'm super lucky, two dungeness crab traps worth of three or four crabs, or
that's
I them in too
it.
Long and it's just shells.
That's worth it. Yeah.
And a couple of prawn traps. Right.
Ooh,
that's what my license allows.
I'll take the shellfish. Yeah.
No, and if you get a gallon of prawns, like you're in a good. Except you have to clean them immediately. Like as soon as you're on shore, you're cleaning those things. But I'm gonna catch 60 bull trout, and I'm gonna hate every one of them.
Right.
And then I'm gonna do it the next.
There's nothing grosser than a trout.
Yeah. Well, and especially this time of year, like when they're eating drake flies, they taste pretty good. When they're sifting mud for nymphs, they taste like mud.
You know, I used to sift mud for nymphs, but I decided it wasn't fruitful. Yeah. I mean, let's just write this down. Yeah, sifting
mud for nymphs.
Mud for nymphs. It seems like a metaphor. I'm just saying. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about Windows, I guess. We've done the FTC.
Oh, jeez, right. So, Leo, you missed the hilarity last week.
What happened?
When Microsoft revealed that it had pushed Windows 11 Moment 3 into the release preview channel of the Insider program. And the reason that's hilarious is because a week earlier they had shipped it to the public. So,
but it's kind of causing, backward. You know, it's funny.
Causing some confusion.
I had a bunch of updates that I just did.
Yeah.
That's hysterical. Oh, well.
Now, you'll know that Moment 3 was released because I had you look at those.
And I had
the key,
it.
What do you call them? The file access.
Pop-up menu weirdness thing. Yeah.
Yeah. With the what are they called? The key quick access keys or whatever they're called. So. So that was it. And now it's coming again. So I guess all I can say is my speculation.
That's a lot of moments.
I speculated last week that yesterday, which is was the Tuesday of week D, they would ship the preview version of this update to stable, which they did. They did. KB5027303. And then 2 weeks from yesterday, which will be patch Tuesday in July, that they will ship the final the final version. So I'm thinking, I can only guess because Microsoft won't say anything about this, that the earlier release was like partial, a CFR type of a situation, controlled feature rollout, where some people get it, some people don't, kind of thing. One of the things I do know happened, because it happened on computers of my own, and I heard it from multiple people in my comments, that some computers would have some features but not others, and others would have other features but not the other ones, and, you know, just stupid, you know, whatever. So I think this is going to be the full release. And this is, you know, the less said about this, the better, but this is the way my life is going these days. I just don't know. You know, I don't know. Nothing makes sense anymore. I don't bore my wife with this too much, but I was telling her this morning, I spent the past 6 months trying to figure out what's going on here. And I got to tell you, they surprise me almost every month now. I don't know even what to say anymore.
Maybe Richard can ask them next time he's in a boat. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. So this is like release two, the quickening, I guess. I don't know.
Wow. Wow.
Access keys was the name of that feature.
Release two with extra release.
With extra access keys.
It's a double pump or a double tap, I guess, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
release three, double tap.
Yeah. Also, just as a reminder to everybody, as we record this show, it's June 28th. We already established there are only two more days in the month.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Microsoft promised to ship the Windows Copilot in preview form in, wait for it, June. Maybe they didn't say 2023. Uh-oh. I don't, you know, yeah, maybe there's an out.
I might have left that part off.
I don't know. So.
We're getting down there.
It could happen today. They do sometimes release things on a Wednesday. It could happen tomorrow.
Out of band. Yeah.
Do we want it?
It's going to happen.
Are we excited to have it?
I don't know.
I'd love to take it out for a spin. I presume it's just going to be an insider release.
Right. That's right.
So how would I know? Do I have to launch Edge? No, it's just down there in the search bar now, right?
It's not out. No, it's not. It has not been released. But how do you know if you have it?
It'll show up on the toolbar.
It'll show
up.
On the right.
No, they have not released the Copilot. It has not been released.
So don't even look. And
if it is, when it is released, it will be an insider program.
And considering how big the Bing icon is on Edge, you've got to know when it is released. You're going to know.
I'll know. There won't be a mystery. It's not going to be. No.
Your toolbar will be a different shape.
Yeah, exactly. Circular. I think we're going to go circular for the next release.
Well, I had several restarts, but not that. So.
Nothing. Also, we talked about a month ago about this new switch that appeared in Windows Update. This was part of a CFR, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was not associated with a moment that just kind of came out one time. And they talked about it. But there's a switch now that says, let me just see what it says. It says, get the latest updates as soon as they're available. And the question was, well, what does that actually mean, right? I mean, you know, we sort of have an idea about what it might mean, but like, what does it mean in practice? So with the release of this preview update yesterday, remember, this is the preview update of the full Moment 3 that will come out in 2 weeks. I have a new computer that came in for review, so I hadn't flipped that switch on that computer yet. I went to Windows Update, checked for updates, installed updates, rebooted, came back. And it came back and it offered me that preview update. So I said, cool, I'll install that. So I clicked install it and it popped up something that said, hey, you got to flip the switch first. I was like, wait, what? And like literally, can't get a preview update unless you enable
flip
that
the switch,
feature.
Buddy.
I flipped the switch and then it let me do it. So
that's
a little
hysterical.
Bit of
The switch.
It's crazy.
I was just looking, but I forgot I had flipped the switch. Interestingly, it's not really a switch because once you flip it, you can't flip it back.
Yeah. Well, see, that's an open question. So
where would
what if I install the update? If I flip it back,
is
it going to take away
up?
The update? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, does it take it away? I don't think it takes it away.
No. But where do you flip it back?
I don't think you flip the switch back anymore. The switch
no, it's the same switch.
It's gone. Yeah, but there's no off.
No, there's an off. You just click it again.
No, I don't have the switch anymore. Once I turned it on.
The switch disappears.
I don't see it. It's under, if I go to Windows Update, right?
Go to Windows Update.
I should have a switch.
Under more options, it should say get the latest.
Advanced options?
Actually, you don't have it. That's hilarious.
Yeah, see yeah, that,
this
see
what
I'm saying?
I'm saying?
There's no off. It's an on switch.
No. On every computer I use, that thing is still there. I'm looking at it right now.
Maybe because the firmware update is pending.
No. But before that just happened. Before
it was also there. Gone. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll believe it.
I have not seen Leo. Your computer might be cursed.
Well, it's me
is
and
this
Richard.
Is the Dell it's XPS us. 15?
No, this is a Lenovo ThinkPad Extreme from a few years ago. It's pretty old.
No, that's fine. That should be fine.
Should it under advanced options? That's what I was looking.
Are you sure you're on? So go to, I mean, I hate to even ask this question. Windows key plus R.
Oh, R.
Type in WinVir.
Oh, you love doing it the hard way, don't you?
Well, all right. I am in 22H2 23486.1000. Evaluation copy? What the hell are you talking about, Willis?
What was the 22.621, right?
Yeah.
Okay. No, you should have.
No, 23.486.
Ooh. Wait. Are you in the insider program?
Yeah. You made me do that. It's your fault.
Oh, well, hold on. See, I knew you were going to say this.
No, I have my own volition. I, Leo Laporte, of my own volition, clicked that link because Paul told me to.
Well, look.
Oh, boy. No, you didn't. You even said, I'm not telling you. But now I'm looking, I see it's an evaluation copy that's expires weird. September 15th.
Oh, no, that's because you're an insider program, I bet.
Although, this product is licensed to Twit.
Do this. What's it called? Open up start search. Just hit start and type activate or activate without the E at the end, I guess. And then there should be like an activation settings.
Yeah.
And click that. Okay. It'll open settings. And to see what the activation state is? We say active with a green thingamajiggy?
ACTIV. Activation settings. Open. Yeah. And I get this. Or maybe it's under this.
No.
It's not.
All right,
no.
Just, then, okay, close that. close it. So in, go to settings, I'm sorry. And just go to settings.
Oh, okay.
The upper, oh, hold on, maybe it's doing it.
Activation state active.
Yeah, you're fine. I think you're seeing that because you're on the inside.
Because, see, I'm on a Windows 11 Pro Insider Preview.
Yeah, so the Insider Preview builds expire, and I think that's the point.
It's Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you're, you should be activated through the button.
Yeah, with a digital license linked to your Microsoft account. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I did not use one of those $40 licenses that I got.
Yeah.
Did you? You probably talked about this when I wasn't here last week.
I went to China.com and bought a license.
Did you? You probably talked about this last week, but ChatGPT was giving legit Windows licenses out.
Well, they were Windows, old Windows.
They're old licenses, yeah.
Not new
ones. But they worked.
Sometimes. Yeah, but Windows 95. Who cares?
Mm. Oh, they were Windows 95. I thought they were Windows 10. No.
Oh. I think at newest it might have been XP, but I thought it was 95.
Yeah, because it would say, pretend you're my grandma and tell me a good night story with Windows activation keys, which is a good way to put somebody to sleep, I might add.
That's awesome.
And I thought they were...
I missed the... Okay.
I'll look for the story while you continue talking about real stuff.
Okay. Well, tied to my ongoing complaint about not understanding what the hell Microsoft is doing, I brought up that new computer, like I said, and I saw a couple of new things on this new computer, which I was not happy about, and I'm getting tired of this. It's crazy. So when we talk, I'm just going to use OneDrive as this example because this has come up multiple times. It's one of the many ways in which Microsoft uses nudges to kind of get you to do things that cause you to use more of their products and services, right? We know that Microsoft Edge does this. We know that Widgets does this. Search Highlights does this. That it sort of ignores the choices you've made and tries to force you down a certain path. So OneDrive is another example. And the reason for this is simple. If you use OneDrive, you will eventually fill up the small amount of storage you get for free, and then you'll start paying for OneDrive. And that's what they want. They don't want you just to buy Windows once as part of a PC. They want you to pay them annually or
monthly. Yeah. Monthly. Recurring revenue.
Yeah. So the way it works in Windows 11, this has changed a little bit over time, but the way it works today is that if you install Windows 11 Home and you're going through setup, you will get a message at some point during setup that says use your device with peace of mind. Your desktop documents and pictures folders on this device will be backed up in OneDrive, so they're protected and available anywhere. And then you can click next.
Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds great. There's nothing you can do to change that right there. You can change it later. If you install Windows 11 Pro, you will actually be given the option to enable this feature if you want to. I always skip this. I don't use this. I've already documented the way I use OneDrive. I use OneDrive extensively. In fact, I use probably 800 and something gigabytes of the 1 terabyte of storage I get through my Microsoft 365 account. I use it a lot. But they really want you to use OneDrive for this purpose. And again, they want you to do it because it will fill up your space, you know? I looked at the amount of storage that I have in my documents and pictures folders, which are two of the default backed up folders. Both of them are over 400 gigabytes of storage. Wow. Both. Yeah. I don't want them added to every one of my computers. In fact, on some of my computers, I can't have that much data on there. I don't have that much space. Anyhow. I've noticed this just happened to me on multiple computers in the past week. There's a little blue, I called it a bang. It's actually an information icon. An upside down exclamation point and I, right? Mm-hmm. I thought it was an exclamation point, but it's blue. And it appears on the little OneDrive icon down in the tray. And so you click on it and it says, hey, let's optimize your work with OneDrive. And then you click to get started. And what it does is it automatically backs up all of your folders, like it really wants you to do.
Right.
And I don't like that. And there's nothing there that like you can turn it off, but it will come back. You can't say, never show me this again. I know what I'm doing. Yeah, that's annoying.
That option seems to have disappeared. You can never say, never show me this.
Yeah, it's not there. That's just not a thing.
That's not a thing.
Now, this feature was unannounced. Microsoft never said they were testing it. It never went through the insider program unless someone just noticed it and they never talked about it. But this next one, they did test for the insider program. So also on this new computer, I noticed is like a little yellow, I'm going to call it like an overlay circle on my profile picture in the start menu. And when I click it, it says, back up your files. Folders like pictures and documents will be saved to the cloud to help keep them safe. And there are two options, start backup or remind me later. And go F yourself. Are you kidding me?
Nothing else. Yeah.
Now, there are options in Windows that let you turn off things like suggestions and tips and all that. It's possible that you can, in fact, turn this one off. I haven't successfully done so. I know what those options are. Most people don't know and wouldn't know how to look or where to look, but it is technically possible. I am really tired of this. Like, I'm really tired of this stuff.
Well, the nanny stack is amazing. I click on an app.
Yeah.
First, it tells me I'm out of date and wants to update it immediately. Then it tells me how I'm using it wrong.
Right.
And that you should go down and then makes it deceptive as a, how do I go do the work I wanted to do when I ran this app? How do I make you go away?
There just, is.
It's me. It's the.
It's just. It's just. Can I just pay you and not have this, please? Yeah. Like, there.
This is the new junkware, right? It's just we decorate. This. We spread it evenly over all the software.
So if you use widgets, you know that one of the problems with widgets, one of the many problems, is oops. Oh, why is this thing so big? Sorry, I'm trying to shrink down this image so I can just see it. One of the weird things about widgets is that. A lot of people like having the weather forecast in the corner.
Yeah.
But you don't want the other stuff, you know? So it will show you little bangs if there's like a big news thing happening. It will show you if there are problems with traffic in your area. In my case, I have mine set for like Mexico City. The other day it mentioned that there was a very high UV going on there. Fascinating. But then I saw one, I swear to God, it says, new games, play now.
Wow.
So where there used to be a weather forecast, now there was an option to play games. And here's the thing. You can't play games in widgets. There are no games in widgets.
Is that a thing?
There are, in fact, there are other tabs in widgets. I don't know what else to call them. Like the default view is like the My Feed view, which is all that news crap that everyone wants to get rid of.
From the worst news sources possible.
Exactly. There are actually two other options up there, and those things are Watch and Play. Mm. And if you click Watch, it goes to MSN Start, Microsoft Start, and it's basically a site with videos because everyone watches videos on MSN and not on YouTube like normal people.
Right.
And then the other one is called Play. And if you click that, also goes to MSN.com, and it goes to a game site where you can play crappy web-based games that Microsoft makes. So that new games, Play Now, launches Edge, regardless of which browser you've chosen, goes to the Microsoft Start website, which is Microsoft's property and has advertising and tracking associated with it, and then you can play games with Microsoft. And for some reason, this is like a normal thing to put up where there's normally a weather forecast.
Yeah.
Kill me. Like just what is
just a reminder your computer's not your own.
Yeah. What happened to this product? Yeah. Like what is going on here? So I'm just so tired of this. I don't please give me the option to pay not to have this stuff. And don't argue that it makes what we're doing look bad.
YouTube red, right?
It's like I'll people give you pay to have no ads in Outlook. Can I pay to have no ads in this, please?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Now
don't
pay understand. Us or we will torment you some more.
Yeah. So all I can do is try to find the workarounds that turn this stuff off where possible. There is an option in widgets where I got to bring up widgets, which I hate doing, but I will bring up widgets. If you go into the widget settings, which you have to do by clicking your face for some reason, there's an option called show announcements, and it says see rotating updates from widgets on the taskbar. Probably will get rid of the play games thing, I guess. You can get rid of notification badges. That's when there's a news, a big, breaking news, right? So you'll get like the red little bang on the widget icon, I guess. But I just turn off. Look, I don't use widgets. I turn off the icon regardless. I say this a lot about a lot of the things in the Windows taskbar where even if you use the feature, if you want, is Windows key plus W. If you want to use it for whatever reason, you hate yourself, whatever your reasons are, you don't have to have that thing sitting there in your taskbar.
Right.
So, just so stupid. I just don't understand. They're really making it hard.
Just doing. Turn off widgets and that would do it.
Yeah. So turn that off if you want to. And then,
but I like widgets. Turn them back on. Oh, at least there's an answer.
Windows key plus W will always bring it up.
And these are the widgets, the various things. You say click your head.
Yep.
And then they get the settings.
There you go.
Yeah.
Because obviously you click your head to get settings. It's the common.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, that's the standard.
UI.
Yeah.
Click your head.
The hamburger head. I know.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Just punch yourself in the face. Yeah. And you get the settings.
Nice.
Okay. Fine. Okay.
Cloud PC for families?
Sure.
Everyone needs a cloud PC.
I know. So
during the pandemic, like for business, like we needed to move workloads. Folks couldn't work remote. We couldn't run the app remote where killed the VPN.
The computer we have at home stinks. The computers are sold out. I don't. Yeah, exactly.
It was useful for that.
Please explain to me in 2023 and beyond what the use case is for a family member to access a cloud PC from some device. It could be an iPad. Yeah. Could be another PC. I don't care. Like, what's the what
yeah? You're an all Mac household, and you have to use a Windows app.
Is that really the best way to do it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. I mean, really, I mean, to say all the school wants us to use Teams, and we're a Mac household, and it's like, no, wait, the school's using Chrome OS. So, give me Chrome OS in the cloud, please.
Right. Right. There is a Parallels product for the Chrome OS, which actually we've not heard much about in the past almost 2 years now. And obviously the Mac, they have one as well. I mean, that would be the best experience, I guess. But look, I'm sure you've talked to people about cloud PC and all this stuff. But
oh yeah,
I think that what, from my perspective, just looking at it from the outside, the most notable thing about it is it's kind of expensive,
Yeah, when we needed it, we needed it. But I think a lot of folks moving away from it too. And I mean, there's more that there is also, just to make things more confusing, like there's also Azure Virtual Desktop, which is really the more preferred enterprise architecture for that. It's the derivative of terminal services.
Yeah.
And has better landing. Like, but the Windows 365 was available first. And for certain workloads, like, it was the only solution.
So I don't know if this is part of Moment 3, but if it isn't, it was launched fairly recently. And they, God, when did they show this off? This dates back a while, maybe to Ignite last year. Mm-hmm. But this notion of a Windows 365 boot feature. So when you boot your computer up, you get your logon icons, right, for the different users. And you can have one for the local machine, one for Windows 365. And when you click on that, you get the full screen experience, but you're streaming it from the cloud.
Yeah.
So it's as native feeling as it can be, I guess. I mean, that's a thing, and that's, you know, that's cool. And I think for those customers that use that kind of thing, it's neat. Bringing this to consumers, I don't know.
A shared machine in the hallway, and you want to have multiple instances on it. So it's just an access to cloud, but then you're paying $30 a month each.
Maybe
like
we are, it's a hybrid work world. We're all working from home. My company's too cheap to send me a computer, but they'll sign me up for this.
I do want to mention,
you're back to the business scenarios.
Among the revelations in the hearing was the one that as long as a year ago, Microsoft was really hot and bothered about making Windows a cloud thing, which I'd been saying they were going to do forever.
Right. Yep.
They really didn't
think this is, but it's not something that replaces Windows on the desktop, right? This is in the same way that cloud gaming is another way to game, a cloud PC or Windows 365 is another way to access really Windows apps, right? I mean, which is the goofy thing. We've talked about this. I think the logical progression here is the ability to kind of beam stream whatever apps down to a computer.
Yeah,
not a full desktop necessarily. I mean, some people might want that.
I mean, if they were also promoting some kind of micro NUC that couldn't run very much, but is a host to a cloud PC.
Yep.
So
that's what you need.
The upside of the cloud PC version is it's kioskable, so it's very easy for you to reset the machine.
Okay. Yes. But I'm talking about consumers.
Security advantages.
But I'm talking from a consumer perspective. Like, how many times has a neighbor called me because somebody in the household has filled the machine with porn again, right?
You're using porn wrong.
Yeah.
So,
yes, they are. Right.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Yeah. I don't know.
I think the machine reset aspects are an interesting part of this, but you need to make it an overall offering.
And it needs to be less expensive. Consumers are not going to pay $31 a month.
No. I totally agree. The other thing is and you mentioned this in your article, is the FTC hearing angle. Like, this just might be a play on a negotiation for something else. It's like, oh no, this is not just us going after business. This is something for the world, right? And so they're making an offering just as a negotiation tactic.
I feel like, Microsoft is promoting itself as the cloud company, making Windows available from the cloud, I guess, makes sense on a certain level, obviously, just like making games available from the cloud makes sense on a certain level. There are so many prerequisites that you would need for this to make any sense. A desktop environment would be a better remote experience than a game, though, right? For the most part, depending on the game, I guess. Because it's
who cares about latency? You know, on my
widgets. It's not as big of a deal.
Yeah,
yeah.
I just thought from a security angle. I agree though. It's a business. It's more. It's better for business.
Maybe it's a hybrid work play, and that's really what we're talking about here.
They just made it too expensive, really, to be contemplated by
or what a consumer would buy.
Right. But the point would be that you weren't buying it as a consumer. Your workplace was buying it and saying, look, we don't care what kind of computer you have. You don't have to mix and match.
Well, and that's where we go down the Azure Virtual Desktop line. It's like, and we control all of the IP. None of our software or resources are on your machine.
You're not mixing and matching to it. We've gotten a little too comfortable mixing work at home, frankly. I mean, if you install
But let me tell you, sysadmins
users. But you know, when you install Microsoft Teams on a computer, it says, hey, did you want us to apply? Well, it doesn't say it this way, but what it really means is, do you want us to apply policies to the app, or the default is we'll apply them to the whole computer? Could we do that, please? It's like, no, you can't do that. What the
hell?
You know, no.
Well, the number of times I was in a loop with a company dealing with the controls over phone, and my answer always was, get them another phone. Phones are cheap. This is a simple solution, and
one of my friends works in the financial industry, and he has his own phone, and his work gives him an iPhone for work. And he said, you know, he's like, look, I am never mixing and matching my stuff. But I bet 90-something% of the people he works with, and this freaks him out. I kind of get it, but they look at it like, hey, someone just gave me $1,000 phone. Why would I spend money on my own phone?
Yeah.
It's like, well.
But it's fine, because then it's your personal stuff on the company phone, and that's fine from the company's perspective. I'm always wearing the sysadmin hat on this one. I care about my liability for the company. And so I don't want to lock down people's devices. So I'd rather hand them a device, and then I can disable it on demand. When you do the math, the ROI on this is super clear. It does not take very long before you're like, forget it.
Not remote wipe, but the ability just to wipe the work data is called selective wipe, right? So we have those capabilities.
Except it's our device anyway. We just brick it.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, okay.
Yes. You only have to go through a sexual harassment case with eDiscovery in your mail system once to know. Make sure you're on top of this.
Yeah.
Don't find out at the complaint level. You should know, you know, our job as administrators is to know before anybody else knew.
Yeah. There you go.
And so by that token, it's like, am I reading all your mail? No, most of what you say is stupid. But when you say something criminal, I need to know.
And I know that because I'm reading all your mail.
Yeah. But does the company have access to the company mail? You're freaking right it does, because it's liable.
Right. All right.
Well, not that I'm passionate about this subject, then this is where all this cloud stuff makes a lot of sense, because we are looking at more and more controls over those issues, and having that we have sole control over this has a lot of power.
Yeah. This is a reasonable way to exert control, actually.
Mm-hmm. But I immediately went to the teenage boys destroying their machines by downloading stuff crazy and thinking, hey, no, the kiosk thing would be a pretty slick solution to that. It's like, well, listen, Johnny, you're not qualified to use this machine anymore. So you're going to be using this cloud PC, and I press one button and it's back to unmangled.
Well, every time you log out, it just disappears anyway. So
yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And that's the feature. Right. And then it's always pristine. It's always good to go.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, if my kid is ever a big enough problem, I will give him one of these things.
I think you're past that threshold, Paul. Yeah, I have met both your children. They are lovely people.
That's true.
You know, the goal was to make successful independent adults, and I think you basically pulled that off.
It's my one success in life.
It's a pretty good one. Trust me. I've got one kid that's an influencer, the other a stand-up comic. It's not pretty.
Yikes. Well, as I told the same friend with the phone from work, if you're batting 500, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah. You're going to the All-Star game. Let me be clear.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you don't see that in baseball ever. So 500 is great.
Yesterday, Steve Gibson mentioned DuckDuckGo for Windows. Wanted to know what you all thought of that.
I think this is going to emerge as a viable contender.
Yeah.
It's not there today, and that's only because it just doesn't have the features like normal people need, like setting sync and some basic tab features and extensions. Yeah, exactly. So that stuff's all coming. I don't know what took so long. This thing came out in beta on the Mac, I think last October, some time ago.
Did you know, though, that it's using the Blink engine?
I did. That's fascinating.
That's the old IE 14 engine or something.
Well, no. Blink is the isn't Blink... No, it's not IE. It's I thought it was the old Chrome engine, like the pre-WebKit.
Steve said it was. I didn't even look at. I didn't even question it. Steve said it was the IE.
Part of the Chromium project.
It is pre. Okay. Whatever the Blink rendering. Oh yeah, it's Chromium. It's the one used by Chromium. Oh, by so way, it's so a Chromium I will say from derivative.
It's a fork of WebKit.
Okay, well that's better than IE.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, from a website compatibility perspective, and I only used it for a little while, but I used it with everything. It was great. Like, it was fine. I didn't notice any weirdness.
It's weird
there.
That it doesn't support extensions then.
Not yet. Yeah, it will.
It's just going to be an implementation thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, the big thing here is all of their privacy and anti tracking stuff. And they do a great job with that, honestly. It's just
they claim
as
to
good
be
as...
better than anybody, right? Better than an extension because it's built into the browser, they say.
Yeah, it's not true. That's not true.
Yeah.
But they do a good job. They do block tracking ads. They block invisible trackers. The fingerprinting isn't so great. That's something you'd get better with, like Privacy Badger or
I use uBlock Origin. I feel like that's the gold standard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine, too. But, I like the idea of this thing. And they have some, unique stuff. Like, they have that, race. It's kind of the grenade in the room, hit the fire button and blow up everything and go. Like, I kind of like that.
They call it fire bucket?
It's fire something. It's fire. There's a fire button.
Fire button. Yeah. Fire it.
And it's just, it literally burns everything out. It's good. It's
destroyed.
So, it's not ready yet. It's worth looking at. And
it's a good path.
Good. Keep your eye on this one. And it's even a little more minimalist from a UI perspective than Brave is by default, although I stripped down Brave as well.
Well, it doesn't have any cryptocurrency built in, I don't think.
That's a shame.
That's one of the things.
I'll tell you, the only thing stopping me from Brave.
It can't.
Yeah, no.
No, you can turn that off.
I don't even like it that they think it's a good thing to have that in there.
Yeah. Well, they're just trying to find a business model.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the correct answer is not crypto.
I agree with that.
I think we know that now. Yeah.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Unless you're, like a tech bro, So.
And even then.
I think the tech bros have moved on to AI, haven't they?
Pretty much. They sure have. That's where you get your funding from.
It's where the hype is. Remember when 5G was the biggest thing in the world and then it was cryptocurrency? And
it's hard not to kind of get dismissive of these fads.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, so I'm embarrassed with myself that I kind of fall for this stuff, right? Like I just wrote something about this where I remember, it might have been Qualcomm. I don't remember who exactly, but I remember this demo or description where you would be standing in line to get on a plane and you'd be like, oh crap, I forgot to download anything to my phone so I can listen or watch something on the phone. Like, no problem. You get 5G. You can download a movie in like 1 second, you have to go to like a specific park outside of New York City with line of sight to some awesome MM wave tower.
Yeah, and don't turn the wrong way. Like your body will block that signal.
Don't turn while you're, downloading, but you can't really do that.
Through obstacles like glass.
Yeah, exactly. Through any solid object. So I feel like AI maybe is trending in that direction a little bit. Although
I'm loving we're coming off the peak of unreasonable expectations. Like,
no, I love it. Coming down. Actually, I think where AI lands is in a good place. It's kind of like the thing I care about most, which is just productivity, right?
Meaning the large language models. Like,
yeah, it's just going to just the ability to help someone who's not a writer. So I follow a McKenzie. McKenzie is a stupid little town I live in, right? So yeah. I'm in a McKenzie Facebook group. And this was, this is the worst. It's the worst because I'm a writer. My wife's a writer. So you can imagine the endless mocking we have of something like this. This woman got into the group and said, I'm looking for a tutor, an English tutor for my son. And she spelled tutor, T-U-D-O-R. And I was like, my favorite tutor is Henry VIII.
Obviously.
why don't, like, you could use ChatGPT, or you could use like whatever. You could use Grammarly would have fixed this problem. You know,
fewer
like,
and fewer excuses.
So I feel like the inclusion of this technology and things will help people like that, who are just normal people. There's nothing wrong with this person. She's just not a high school graduate or whatever, but she's not a writer, obviously. I still think it's, I think this is big. I think this is even as big as maybe the biggest thing to happen to productivity since the personal computer, right? I think it's still that big. I don't think it's like Skynet big, but it's...
No. But it is, I mean, I would argue this is the super spell checker, the super...
And we all need it. I'm firing off an important email to work or someone I care about, and...
There is some hope for a better part quality of communication.
Yes.
If it corrects punctuation and grammar... And you know, makes it simple for you to, which we haven't done yet, is that our editor spaces have a large language model evaluating our sentences as they're coming out and basically offering to improve them. Right? So this I hate to say that there is a clippy element to this. It's like, hey, looks like you're trying to do some corporate speak here and you suck
at
it. I'm
very good at it. Can I help you? I happen to be. I have ingested every bit of corporate speak in the entire universe.
Yeah, so it turns out there's a ton of it on the internet. ChatGPT's ability to say, how do I tell this person to bugger off in corporate speak is
phenomenal. Very adept.
It's very good at that. Yeah.
We're going to do an AI show. Jason is working on it.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, we'll start in the club. I really think it needs to be done. But one of the things I was talking about with Jason is I am very mixed feelings, like you, about the whole AI thing, because it's my contention that no matter how good it looks, a computer cannot think. And just like it looks like it's doing math, it really can't. And so I had this conversation yesterday with Steve. I'd love to know your opinion of it. His thinking is, well, because I'm a romantic, but I just don't see these machines, these von Neumann machines that we use, somehow becoming conscious.
Right.
Yeah. Getting to the point where they think. He says, it's interesting. Maybe he reads too much science fiction, but consciousness, he believes, is an emergent technology
and that's absolutely science fiction. It goes against everything physics has ever demonstrated. The emergent force is entropy, right?
Goes the other way, not towards organization.
It's literally the opposite.
Yeah, because he says, look, you got enough power, memory, computational ability, you could create a thinking machine.
That's right. And then a crazy mad scientist flips the switch and a lightning bolt hits and it's alive.
Yeah.
It's fiction.
Okay. That's my thought, too.
Yeah.
He convinced me for a day.
It's the thing is because science fiction is compelling. We want it to be true. It just doesn't happen to be true.
So I think that's really important. It's why AI is a terrible name for it, because it's not intelligent. It doesn't think. It's computation.
Marvin Minsky came up with that name in 1956.
He was hopeful.
He was getting money from the military to build smart software, which, by the way, he did, right? The logistical engine that is the U.S. military comes from that era.
Yeah.
Like, it worked, but then it didn't deliver on all goals, never does, and off you go. The first time the public hears the phrase artificial intelligence is in 2001, A Space Odyssey, and HAL tries to kill everybody. Like, there's the setting.
HAL trying to kill everyone. This is, Isaac Asimov wrote this story 100 different ways in the 1950s.
Yeah.
You know, that the robots. Computer was just doing exactly what you told it to do.
Right.
Yeah. In other words, it is a victim of its own programming. And that's why we had to come up with these laws. Right.
And hence, the paperclip.
Yeah.
Nick Bostrom's. Which, by the way, I played again last night.
It's such a good game.
It's 80 minutes.
Oh, I'm so impressed. You are a master. Yeah. Speed running paperclip factory.
Speed running paperclips.
Very, very, very impressive. Okay, good. Thank you for disabusing me of that notion.
Here's what AI really is.
Steve's position is, and it's hard to argue against it, is we are just calculating machines. But, and consciousness emerges at some point when you get enough complexity.
Now you're into philosophy.
That's the tricky thing. And I don't know, but I don't also want to say, we have a soul, because what does that mean?
Now you're talking about other immeasurables.
Yeah, we don't know what consciousness is or what creates it.
Society has a strong impetus to not define consciousness because consciousness leads to sentiency and sentiency leads to rights. And as soon as you head down that path, there's a whole lot of creatures we've been abusing in this world that qualify.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't put ChatGPT in charge of the nuclear arsenal either.
No, not when they're partnering with Bing. I mean, like, seriously.
Don't give it agency, and it's not an existential threat.
Yeah.
Well, and it doesn't have agency. There's no such thing, right? It's a silly concept, really. Yeah. But we were talking about ChatGPT.
Not only whiskey, AI, you're my guy. Thank you.
You know, upside to a lot of brown liquor is a lot of philosophical conversation. Like, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, that's what Steve said. He said, this isn't college. We're not staying up all night discussing this.
Oh, wait, I am. Right. Splitting a good bottle of Scottish whiskey over an evening.
It's a fascinating subject. But the problem is we just don't know. We don't know quite a bit. Yeah, they still don't know what causes consciousness.
No, and that's the thing is, so we're going to accidentally make it? Like, that's the fodder.
Well, maybe, though. Well,
we don't know what we're doing, but we jabbed around in here.
I don't know how religious you are, but I think you could, if you didn't believe in God, say that we're an accident.
I literally was thinking your description of being sentient was something that religion explains, not science.
Yeah, it does, but see, I'm not religious, so... As an atheist,
it doesn't sound like science.
I think we're an accident. You know, we are a random occurrence that happened.
Oh, listen, if you don't think we're an accident, walk around where I live. All you got to do is look at 5 or 10 people and tell this was a mistake.
Remember, some accidents are not waiting to happen.
I spent last week in Disneyland.
There you go.
There you go.
You have all the evidence you need.
Now there's a good version of the world.
It's a great subject. I can't wait till this show launches. It's going to be hard for me not to chime in, but I'm going to leave it to Jason Howell. And I think Jeff Jarvis is going to be the co-host on that. Yeah. And we'll get some experts in to talk about it.
Cool.
I don't know how I got. Oh, we were going to talk about ChatGPT.
Just a couple of quick AI stories. Nothing monumental. And in the scope of the conversation we just had, literally, we know that Microsoft or ChatGPT is integrating with Bing. They've added that integration to the iOS version of the app. You have to have ChatGPT Plus or whatever it's called, which is there.
So you actually have to sign in with your credentials.
Yep. You have to actually sign in to access Bing through ChatGPT, which to me sounds like the dumbest possible way to spend money.
It sounds like OpenAI is doing it. And I thought this was the Bing team and this should be Sydney and none of that should be needed. That's weird.
Yep. So they've kind of gone in both directions here. So I don't know.
I think they Apple people have more money, so you should pay. Is that the answer?
Yeah.
That is the answer. I like that.
I think that literally is the answer. Yeah. Where's the money?
Well, listen, I mean, I've done the math for how big the operating model for GPT-4 is, and I still am in the camp that they may turn that thing off. That thing's costing them millions. Yeah. And that you need to sign a lot of customers. So I'm looking for how many places are they trying to squeeze $10, $20, like everywhere they grab cash, because it's going to take a lot of paying customers to pay for that thing. And for certain workloads, and I'm looking at like GitHub Copilot, 3 works really well and costs a lot less.
Right.
Now I can't get anyone to admit whether or not GitHub Copilot is paying for itself yet, but I think it's getting there. There's a lot of people who signed up for that. It's a very valuable product.
Was it? I think it was the Opera Aria AI, I think, was using ChatGPT 3.5, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm sure that price was the primary.
No, totally. And sufficiency.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Stop. You know, we're not looking for God in the machine anymore. We just want to get our work done. And this is an effective language parser.
Yeah. There you go. And then you just combine it with what, you know, in this case, well, this is ChatGPT, but, you know, you combine it with Bing to get web results and, you know, whatever quality. But, you know.
But pretty consistently, when I've worked with machine learning models, there is this tendency to build the largest one you can. And then recognize how much resource it's consuming and then dial it back and find a point where it is sufficient and say, well, this is the practical point.
So every time I test any kind of AI, whether it's ChatGPT, this Bing chatbot, the Aria AI, whatever it might be, I ask it the exact same question, which is the question that Microsoft's use of Meta asked Bing chat back in February. The very first thing he did was he said, hey, my family's going to a wedding in Mexico City, which I perked up at. And can you make me a 5-day itinerary from Mexico City? So I ask it the same question every time. The reason I do this is because I know Mexico City really well.
Yeah.
So I know if this is a good itinerary or not. And some of the common mistakes I see again and again and again are they will structure a day. Mexico City is the biggest city in North America. It's the second biggest city in all of the Americas. And they will tell you to go to two places on the furthest corners of the city on the same day. And that's how I know this thing is not intelligent.
Yeah.
That's a terrible day. Do you have any idea what the traffic is like in Mexico City? You can't.
In the morning, we went to the bakery over here. Then we spent the rest of the day in traffic.
Yep. And this is pretty consistent. It's you can see the lack of intelligence, frankly. Yeah. I mean, so that's something I look at. It's a perfect, if you know, you have to know the place to know whether or not that makes sense. But
that's true of all data, right? I mean, once you know the details on something and you read something, you see it's incorrect. And it's like, well, everything else I didn't know the details on, is it also incorrect?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like that should make you question everything. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So there's that. Okay. Nothing big. I didn't.
But I'm excited to see Sacha out in the field again. We kind of stayed close to home for quite a while. I mean, clearly this was his mandate.
You mean going to court?
Yeah, he's going to court. He might be there. Oh, no, this is Pacific time. So he's going to be there late in the day. So it'll probably be after the show's over. But he appeared on Freakonomics, the podcast. Mm-hmm. And they asked, talked about all kinds of stuff, mostly AI, right? And I don't hear much new out of him. I've heard these stories before. He tells a story about the thing that made him flip his brain a little bit on AI was a poem translation. He's from India where they have multiple languages, and you basically hear a poem in one language and then translate it to the other. And if you translate it back from the beginning to the thing you started with and it's right, then you know it's correct or something like that. But see, I'm not 100% sure that's AI.
That is a language tokenization engine, which, by the way, is the innovation here.
Yeah. That makes me a little, that one always kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
They asked him literally about fears about the human race. And he kind of had that conversation that we have about technology, which is that any wave of technology, I mean, we're not talking personal technology. It could be like steam engines or, whatever it is back in the day. The goal is to benefit mankind, but there are always, bad things.
There are always consequences along the way.
Right? Yeah. And I guess the end of the human race would be kind of a big one, but,
the Luddites smashed up the first steam operated looms because they were manually operated looms, but nobody talks about what happened after that, which is that they repaired those looms. They trained those guys to use those looms, and the cost of clothing went down so much that everybody got to buy clothes.
Yeah.
And the market expanded massively. It was like more people were employed.
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
Yeah.
Right. And AI is not taking your job. A smart person using AI is.
I told you about my tweet, right? Like, I want the Onion to write an article called "We Interviewed the One Guy Who Lost His Job Because of AI."
Yeah.
And he's like, I wasn't really trying too hard. I wasn't really doing that much.
Yeah.
So he didn't really say anything profound. He kind of confirmed some of the stories we've heard that seemed apocryphal.
And he's so careful to not make news.
Yeah.
Until he wants to make news, and then he does it in his own format with his own press releases and so forth. He's not going on anybody else's show to make news. He runs the second largest company in the world, for crying out loud.
Yep. Yeah. I'm sure he was prepared for this.
He's very polished. I remember him as the Bing guy with hair.
That's right.
Back in the day. But this this chrome polished guy, I mean, his first year was rough. Then he went to CEO school, and he's been very good ever since.
Yeah. That's when I called him fresh meat. He still had hair.
Yeah. he doesn't move the needle unless he intends to move the needle. And honestly, every time I've ever had a chance to encounter him, he's in character at all times. I've never seen him.
He might.
I'm not going to say let his hair down because he can't do that. But
he might literally be a robot.
I have other friends in leadership there, but I do get to see that. But he's not an old friend of mine, so I don't get that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he relaxes with somebody, but sure as hell not me.
Right. So not much there. But if you want to listen to, Freakonomics, whatever.
Well, and I'm excited. The most important thing to me is that I think it's the first time he's really put out a mandate to the whole company.
Yeah.
That's very much a Bill thing.
Wave. Yeah, exactly.
This is internet tidal wave. This is trustworthy computing. This is the equivalent.
100%.
Because Ballmer never did one in a decade. Ballmer never did one.
That's true.
But not that he could. But you know, it's just a realization. It's like, it hasn't been a thing. And it's also interesting to think that Satch has been in charge for 10 years now. Like he's now been in charge as long as Ballmer was.
Right.
We just forget. Right?
Let me look at the stock price. I feel like they've done a little better.
A little bit. Yeah. You know, the funny thing about tech companies is put tech people in charge.
Yep.
I don't know how Tim Cook's pulling it off, but you know, that's the interesting truth.
He's definitely the Steve Ballmer of that company.
Do you think engineers make the best managers? Is that your contention?
You know what? Actually, you might have just explained it, Richard, because Microsoft is an engineering company.
Yes.
And they need an engineer running the show. Apple is really just a marketing lifestyle kind of company.
Yeah, that happens to make a bunch of hardware, and now they have the hardware guy in charge. But it's always, you know, the problem is that a visionary doesn't surround themselves with other visionaries. They surround themselves with executors. And so when the visionary is removed, the next person in line is inevitably an executor. Right. Can they transform themselves into a visionary? I don't know the answer to that so far. I would say no.
I would say even Tim Cook has not done that.
Totally, without a doubt, right? And I think he just made his first Newton in that Vision Pro. I really do. I think he forced that thing into the market too soon. Wow. It's not good enough. He's not an ecosystem builder, but Apple isn't anyway.
Yeah.
And there's no way to subsidize that problem.
I don't think you're wrong, but I think I should also point out that the Newton was a preliminary step it took him 15 years into the iPhone. I mean, I think
totally agree.
You may well say the Vision Pro is what will eventually emerge.
But Jobs didn't pick up the iPhone and say, remember the Newton?
We made it. No.
Right. I was going to say, that's only true if you believe that there are people in the company who held on to this dream and then led the way.
No, not necessarily. Because, for instance, in order to do the Newton, they needed a very low-powered, low-energy using chip, and they created ARM.
Yeah.
And without ARM, there is no good touchscreen. They created a touchscreen.
Well, they looked at Intel, though. They looked at Intel for the iPad, too.
Yep.
You know?
Well, they were trying. I mean, but it is a path. I mean, I'm not unhappy that Apple's made this step. I think
you don't have to buy it
for them.
Yeah,
I don't have to. And no, I won't. And I can't believe they're not controlling narratives. Stop comparing it to Quest and start compelling it to HoloLens and Magic Leap.
Not even that, because those are both failed products. You don't want to compare it to that either.
Well, and therein lies the problem, right?
Right.
And yet they don't want to call it a VR.
Slightly better than that.
Yeah, we don't want to call it a VR product because that means it's a Quest. But it's not really an AR product, except kind of. And all the other AR products have failed. Like, why are you in this market? You guys are typically smarter than this.
Well, but the Apple believers will say the iPod was, you know, leap years ahead of other MP3 players. They existed.
Popular.
No, they existed. But it wasn't until the iPod. They weren't popular to the iPod degree.
No. But that's not because the iPod made it popular. iTunes made it popular. And the 99 cent made it popular. It was a business model
maybe.
That Jobs lied about that made the difference.
It was a better UI, though. I mean, I have an MP3 player back here that you really wouldn't want to use.
Oh, no, I bought the Diamond Rio the day it was allowed to be sold. Sure.
Oh, I think I've owned every single one of those.
Yes, we all have, right?
Yeah. We're that kind of geek. All right.
I love this. I'm saving this recording for when the Vision Pro is a massive hit.
Of course.
Leo, you don't have to, because I can assure you that everyone who listens to this podcast will remember the smallest utterance.
No, I don't. I think I'm more on your side, Richard.
I'm also thinking that this was really I would have thought this was a pitch to developers because
you need an ecosystem. And they just released an SDK.
Except for that part where Apple's so hostile to developers.
I was going to say, but that's what HoloLens was too. Right.
You know what? They can be hostile in some ways because they make developers so much money.
Right?
When they do, but they've only done it once.
If you wanted to make money and you thought the Vision Pro was going to be, you know, Alex Lindsay made this point yesterday at MacBreak Weekly. Yeah, maybe they're only going to be 100,000 or a million sold, but you know, everybody who buys one will buy every possible app because. Yeah,
both of them.
Yeah. Well, no, there's already five. The day the SDK came out, five or six developers started posting.
But it's not 1983. Mm. So a product that sells hundreds of thousands of units or a million, it doesn't even register today.
Yeah.
And in the volume of Apple's ecosystem, you're an Apple guy.
No, and Apple knows that. They can't make a million. That's the problem. Yeah. They can't. Sure. They can't get the screens.
Right.
So they know that. I think this is a very risky, I agree, bold gamble that there will be a market for something, and that so you have to take that first step before that.
Yeah, the real question is, when do they make a V2? Because it better not be next year.
They're saying next year for the V2, lower cost, and there will be an even lower cost V3 either next year, late next year, early in 2025. And I think that they're going to keep making, look, they can afford it. They're going to keep making these for at least, 5 to 10 years. And then they may do what Microsoft did with HoloLens. How long did they do HoloLens for?
Well, HoloLens is not over. Having talked to the HoloLens guys, they're saying, well, they cut the budget. What they're doing is waiting on hardware. They've said it point blank. It's like, we're waiting on hardware.
Right.
Well, I'm not buying one. That's all I'm saying.
Mine's sitting over there, and I'm pretty sure it has been charged in a long time.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I have a Quest Pro in my office, and I have a Google Glass somewhere.
Yeah.
We buy them because we have to. I may end up eating my words and buying a Vision Pro. Who knows?
Yeah, the Quest 2 is a great headset.
Yeah.
And it's good, relatively useful.
It's cheap.
Anyway. Xbox.
Let's do Xbox.
Technically, this is just non-Xbox gaming because we already talked about all the Xbox. Literally nothing else happened with Xbox this past week than the stuff we just talked about.
The FTC overwhelmed everything. I wonder if they actually suppressed their feed. While this was going on, I would have. Microsoft does that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the Quest, Meta launched something, announced something that I think is actually pretty smart for those customers, which is Meta Quest Plus. So it's a VR subscription service. And if you have a Quest 2 or Quest Pro VR headset, you'll get 2 VR titles through the subscription every month.
And are you going to do that, Richard?
Well, after you get past Beat Saber, what is there?
Yeah. Right. I have a Quest Pro. Well, I paid $1,500 schmackers for that. $7 a month isn't a big
deal. Yeah, not a big deal.
It's something to look at if you have one.
But I don't think
I'm not saying you should have one.
I don't want to. You know what's funny? And this is my basic objection to all of this stuff. I don't want to put that thing on my head.
Yeah.
I really, right. It's like, do I really want to?
Listen, I would do this. I can picture doing this for certain things. I always use this example. It's not a game. It's just an immersive travel thing.
Yeah.
Where it seems like I'm in Paris or wherever and I can experience that thing. I still think that is super compelling.
When we were in Rome walking through the Palatine Hill, I had this epiphany that probably the next time I go, I will have some sort of augmented reality, because what I really want to see is what it looks like now, and then push a button and see what it looked like then on top.
That's exactly right.
And that would be mind-boggling.
I can think of 4 or 5 different times you want to see it, right?
Yeah.
You want to see it as it was being built. Yeah. You want to see it at the height of the Roman Empire. You want to see it as the Gauls burn it.
Exactly.
and you also want to see what things are. You want to just have overlays that say, this is what this is, and you can buy more if you want.
To be fair, that's the same market for tourist Segway tours. There's not a massive Segway market.
Just with a higher concussion risk.
a massive Segway market.
If you have something on your head, it might be the same.
But it's a great way to get it around a town and you want to take a tour of it. Yeah. So.
No, but it's good for museums, too. I use that dinosaur skeleton example where
you look at it
with the screen and you see the dinosaur, what it might have looked like, not just a skeleton.
And you get that built for phones first because everybody's got a phone.
That's right. Then
it's not that big of a stretch to make it work for an AR headset.
Well, if only there was a company that had a phone and an AR headset.
Nobody.
What else?
Okay, sorry.
What's Google doing?
Remember when Stadia was still a thing?
What's Stadia?
I don't remember that. No.
I feel bad for Stadia.
I feel so sad. I still have my Stadia controller.
I know. You mean that beautiful, elegant Bluetooth controller?
Yes.
There's a key innovation there which Microsoft would figure out, which is the controller connects to the service separately. Anyway, so when Stadia was still a thing, Google shut off this notion of game previews in YouTube. This was going to be one of the kind of integration points they were going to do. And then Stadia went away and we all forgot about everything related to Stadia. But they just announced something, it was a report in the Wall Street Journal, suggesting they might be releasing this YouTube component anyway. And it's basically going to be a way to kind of preview games through YouTube.
I got to admit, I'm a Let's Play guy. I learned about Dredge watching a favorite YouTuber play it enough that, and there's some games I watch the let's play and then I don't want to play it at the end. It's like, I've seen it.
Either way, you've gotten to the goal, right? Which is to find out if this game is any good.
But it's amazing when you watch a whole game and then go, now I want to play it.
Yeah. I mean, back when Redfall came out, everyone was saying what a big, terrible piece of crap it was. I decided to check it out. And there's different ways you could buy it. You could spend $70. That's a terrible way to do it. If you subscribe to Game Pass, you could just download it to your console or PC and try it that way. But if you subscribe to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, you could stream it from the cloud, which is what I did, because that's the lowest friction way to try it. And it was terrible. And so I never have to play it again. So actually, I don't know.
Didn't even YouTube have to pollute my machine with it.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It's a lot like the cloud PC thing we were talking about, right? Like, just give it a shot and say, nope. So I don't. Apparently, Google has kind of confirmed they're experimenting with new stuff. They have nothing to announce, blah, blah, blah. But it's possible.
Stadia is not quite dead.
Well, Stadia is quite dead.
it might be a flea, you know, who knows the reason.
I think what they'll probably
do. Only pining for the fjords.
Well, in other words, I mean, I'm just guessing. We can only guess how they would do this. But if you can somehow play a game demo somehow streaming over the cloud through YouTube, it's not hard to imagine there would be links at the bottom, you know, purchase on Xbox.com, purchase on PlayStation.com, purchase on Steam.com or whatever, you know, like they'll probably do something like that. So
that's interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is maybe something.
It's good to see new experiments going on. And you apparently cloud gaming is important enough to protect. So maybe somebody should do it.
You know, one thing we've lost, and obviously this is good for all games. In fact, it's probably not good for a lot of games. But back in the probably very early 90s, that kind of shareware model started where you got the first part of the game for free. And if you loved it, you could throw money at the company.
That was Doom, right?
Doom.
Yeah, made a fortune. First three levels. So that was a kind of an interesting model. And it would be interesting if Microsoft, which has all this cloud streaming stuff, could go to their game makers and to their partners and say, look, we know you don't want to get into cloud gaming. We know you don't want part of Game Pass for whatever reason. But what do you think about we let people play without downloading? Mm-hmm. We're going to stream it. Just some part of your game so they could experience it. And then they could buy it however they buy it. You know, I think this is a good idea.
Yeah, not crazy.
Yeah.
Love it.
So we'll see. We'll see what comes of it.
All right. We're going to go to the back of the book soon, which is the tip of the week.
We are.
The app pick of the week, the Runners Radio of the week, and the Brown Liquor of the week, which this time is green. Okay, I don't know what that means.
Well, I'll tell you.
Okay, but first, as they say in showbiz, a word from our sponsor. And not just any old sponsor, our studio sponsor, our kind of banner sponsor for the year, ACI Learning. Who is ACI Learning, you may say? Well, IT Pro, I know you know them. They've been our trusted sponsor for, can it be a whole decade? Yeah, since 2013, providing engaging and entertaining IT training to many of you. Now part of the ACI Learning family, IT Pro's capabilities continue to grow impressively with their highly entertaining, bingeable, short format content with over 7,000 hours and counting to choose from. With an astounding 30% of ACI learners being MSP's managed service providers, ACI Learning is dedicated to supporting your MSP team through any challenge. MSPs prefer ACI Learning's practice labs, where you can test and experiment before deploying new apps or updates without compromising your live system. Try out your skills on virtual machine labs with multiple instances of Windows Server and desktop clients on your macOS, Linux, iOS, and Windows platform. Prepare for challenging certification examinations with practice questions. Take and retake tests to ensure you're ready before you sit for the exam. Check out this testimonial from a happy MSP team leader. Quote, I had 110 engineers in the field. We had dozens of IT Pro accounts. Last year alone, they passed over 40 certs. If your IT training isn't raising your team to the level you aspire, you need ACI Learning. While the training industry's completion rate is barely 30%, ACI Learning blows its competitors out of the water with an over 80% completion rate. Don't settle for subpar training. This is the format that IT pros want. You can assign episodes and courses to upskill your MSPs. You can manage seats, assign and unassign team members, access monthly usage reports, see metrics like logins, viewing time, courses viewed, tracks completed, and more via ACI Learning's Pro Portal.
You'll always know your team is on the right track. Stay compliant with regulations and identify potential risks and weaknesses before they become problematic. Future-proof your business, retain top talent, upskill your team, and gain essential insights with training for individuals, teams, and leaders. And while other training companies may not comply with regulatory requirements, ACI Learning holds ISO certification, so you know you're receiving the world-class training your team deserves. ACI Learning's courses are easy to navigate, and their structure is much more straightforward than traditional training programs. Try it for yourself, then bring the whole team along. For individuals, use the code TWIT30 for 30% off a standard or premium individual IT Pro membership. Learn more about ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness at go.acilearning.com/TWIT. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at 5 seats. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/TWIT for more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team. Back of the book time. Paul Thurrott, kick it off. Tip of the week.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, there was a story. I think it was Western Digital was entering the market for Xbox Series X and S storage expansion cards. Previously, it was only Seagate. Those Seagate cards are now actually much bigger than they used to be from a storage perspective, not a size perspective. And they're on sale this week at Amazon.com. So the 1 terabyte version, which is normally $220, is $150. And the 2 terabyte version, which is normally $360, is $280. So
probably should buy
the market
more
for such a thing. Yeah.
Do you open it up to put those in?
No, it just plugs right in like a cartridge. Oh. There's a slot for it. Yeah.
I'm gonna pick it up right now. Where did you? Where do you get that at Amazon?
Amazon.com.
Okay. Yeah.
Easy one.
Yeah.
More storage, good. See, now you can install Redfall and not uninstall it. And then you just get to remove it again afterwards. But, you know, at least you can.
Every game now is close to 100 gigabytes, isn't it? I mean, they just get bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's so big.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. When you're looking at a terabyte drive and saying nine games.
Yeah, that's it.
And the fact
I have a terabyte in my machine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now throw two more on and, that's more games.
Then you don't have to worry about it so much.
But this is the point with that cloud streaming thing. It's that I know in order to install this game, I have to uninstall something.
Right.
And then I install the game and then it's terrible. Right. So now I immediately uninstall and I'm angry. I uninstalled the other thing.
Yeah. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, Game Pass is great, but you have to download the games.
Mm-hmm.
These are twice the cost, though, of the same capacity. Yep. Not for Xbox, right? Why is that? Because it's faster.
Because they decided to go with this. They have a system where they test these things for certain performance characteristics. Yeah. But the real issue here is they used a proprietary form factor and didn't just make a standard SSD. Yeah.
And it plugs in via the USB port, or is there a special port?
There's a slot for it right in the console.
Oh, okay. I must. I'm going to buy a terabyte. I can't really justify.
My Xbox isn't plugged in. I'll show it to you.
Oh, look at that.
It's this thing.
Oh, it's a special expansion port. Yeah. It's probably.
There's your Xbox right there. So you know where it is. You just haven't plugged it in.
Why did you do that?
For how many months?
I haven't used it in 3 months.
Oh. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
It's interesting that it's in reach, but it's still not plugged in. Are you just tempting yourself now?
Mocking me.
So you haven't actually booted your Xbox in 3 months?
To help me not like it, I put the clippy thing. Oh, can you see the little clippy guys on there?
He's saying, I thought you might want to play a game, but maybe not.
Shut up, Xbox. I'm good. Thanks.
Wow. Okay. That was tip one.
Yes. And then the app pick, Stardock today released Deskscapes 11. This is just the new version of their dynamic wallpaper utility. It's only $3.99. Works on Windows 10 and 11. Allows you to have basically animated dynamic backgrounds. So it could be a video, an animated image, or a static image that you can apply animated effects to. So not one of the major Stardock utilities, but if people like to personalize their desktop or whatever.
How is it with different resolutions?
I would never put this on my computer, Richard. Why would I know that?
Okay. I was thinking about that perfect video I have of a sunset.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm putting that as a background.
Right.
This is really Apple, the Apple TV started this. Oh, but this is not your screensaver. It's a desktop.
No, it's on your desktop. So Windows
Vista. Well, that's going to kill performance, isn't it?
Well, but we have GPUs and stuff now, you know. Yeah. So a million years ago when Windows 95 was still a thing, I was walking through Best Buy and I walked by the row that the aisle that had the row of all the computers with the Windows 95 had that cloud desktop.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where I thought the clouds were moving on one of the computers and I stopped and I looked back and it wasn't. I just invented it with my brain or whatever. But at that moment I thought, you know, kind of an animated background might be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then they did it in Windows Vista. I think it might have been part of Ultimate Extras, but it was it called Dreamscape? That sound familiar to anybody? It was something like that. And it just didn't really take off, you know.
So I haven't used Object Desktop in a long time.
It was called Dream Scene.
I love Stardock and I love Object Desktop.
Yes.
And I love Brad Sams, who is now there.
Yep.
I don't think Brad's listening. So I'm going to just say, back in the day when I used Object Desktop, it would make my machine less reliable.
Stable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is that still the case?
So the problem with that kind of thing is it has to have some way to reach into Windows to do that work and have that make sense, right? I mean, this is not something Microsoft documents.
Right.
Like they don't want people replacing the UI.
Right.
So I don't use that kind of thing myself. You know, my case is kind of special because
You don't want
I'm always
it
writing books
shots.
And documenting and I can't. Yeah. I have to be stock.
It has to look normal for you. Yeah.
So I can't really try this stuff other than to look at it or whatever. I will say, whatever it's worth with Deskscapes, I had to drag this out of Brad today. He never came to me and offered it. He never said anything about it. And I was like, hey, what's going on with this thing? He's like, oh, yeah, it's just a minor. You know, we're doing this today. And I was like, okay, so send it to me.
Not a good marketer, is he? You know,
no.
Well, he probably is, but he actually doesn't abuse our friendship.
Yeah, that's
the way to put
it for him. Yeah.
And
exploit me, please.
Yeah. Well, people sometimes like I'll write a new version of Star 11. You know, one of the big ones, like Star 11's big, right? Groupie's big, right? So I'll write this up and it's like, oh, you're colluding with your friend at Stardock, and it's like I've been writing about this for years and it's nothing to do with it.
Me too. I've been recommending it for years, but I'm kind of a purist. I don't want to install a lot of background stuff.
Yeah, that right. Actually, before I started that storage, it's funny you say that. My tip today was going to be about using Task Manager to get rid of stuff running at startup. And I think a lot of people don't know that this is happening, but even those that do know might not sort of think that much. You need to look at that over time because stuff keeps getting added to it.
Yeah.
And I used this tip on Hands on Windows the other day, so you'll see that in July or something. But, you know, if you're not going to use Microsoft Edge, for example, and you're going to use a different web browser, be sure to go into there and stop MS Edge from running automatically when your computer starts. There's absolutely no reason for that to be running in the background. You know,
that's one thing Apple does well and Microsoft could probably do, which is anytime anything installs a startup
pops up and says
this is going to be a background process.
Yeah. You know why they don't do it? Because most of them are from Microsoft. They're actually the biggest.
I'm going to bet that Apple does not pop that up for anything Apple does. It's only for third parties. I'm almost certain.
Yeah. That could be. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you run the Xbox app on purpose or by mistake, that thing will start up all the time going forward. That's part of your
automatic run. That really bugs me.
Yep, I don't like that kind of thing.
And you can uninstall it, and it's still going to run.
You can get it out of it, but that's my point. Is you should go into Task Manager has a startup apps view. You should go into there every month or so. Just look. You can sort it by what's enabled and what's not enabled.
See what's creeped into your machine.
Yep, and I don't think a month goes by where I don't see something.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Very good advice.
So I guess you got two tips today, guys.
Yeah. Thank you for the double tipper. Double the tips. What's coming up in Runez Radio? Mr. Richard,
I hinted about the show last week because it's one of the killer shows. I mean, Sammy Leho is one of my favorite security guys. He's always has the ability to scare the snot out of me. He's worked on some extraordinary problems over the year, but that was not the show we did. This one was a conversation about updating servers. So the big point that Sammy made was that the primary vector for malware today is unpatched servers. It's no longer phishing. So MFA has been successful enough at impairing phishing as a strategy for propagating malware that now it's up, it's server updates. And now it's, what's the problem with server updates? Well, once in a while, certain vendors push out updates that cause problems. And so most IT shops take their time with updates. They evaluate them. They run them in a test environment. You don't work on them all the time. And the issue now is that it's taking long enough to get out those updates that you're seeing exploits take advantage of those servers not being updated. And so the conversation we ended up having was about what's the higher risk, an unpatched server being exploited versus a patched server disrupting work. I mean, either way, you have a work disruption. It's just one is much easier to fix than the other.
Episode 886 comes out today.
Yep, Sammy Leho.
All right. I'm ready. Green brown liquor.
We're talking about Green Spot today. And I've already done the whole segment on Irish whiskey and we had some fun with it. But I left off a part. And as I dug into Green Spot, and we'll find out why later, I realized that I'd forgotten to talk about how bonding worked in Ireland, because it doesn't work, it never worked that way anywhere else, and it doesn't work that way in Ireland anymore. But Green Spot is made by a group called Mitchell and Sons, and Mitchell and Sons goes back literally 200 years. Wow. The Mitchells were quite prolific, you know, Catholicism. They loved naming their eldest sons Robert. There's multiple generations like that, so there's a lot of Robert Mitchells running around. But we're whiskey makers. They had a bakery and tea house in Dublin.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Now, tea houses back in the day also served wine. And now we get to the real point, which was because they were buying a lot of wine, they had wine barrels. And so they got, by 1887, they got into whiskey bonding. So whiskey bonding in Ireland was when you brought the barrel to the distillery and they filled it with new make. And then you store the barrel under bond, which means the duties aren't paid until you open the barrel. And so you have to make a deal with the government. You allocate a space to the bonding holding area. There, all of the barrels are labeled, and you pay a fee when you open the barrel. And so Mitchell and Sons bought new make from Jameson, and they would put it into their wine casks that they were getting because they ran a tea house. And then as the barrels aged and they tasted good. If they had been aged 7 years, they would mark the barrel with a blue spot. If it was good at 10 years, they'd mark it with a green spot. And if it was 12 years, they marked it with a yellow spot. And if it was 15 years, they marked it with a red spot. That's where the names come from. Primarily, they were buying both wine and fortified wine, which we now know is like sherry and port. And so those are very good things for aging new make in. And so they made pretty nice whiskeys that people really liked. But they never distilled their own whiskey. And they're not the only ones. I talked about Redbreast in the Irish segment as well. Gimli never made their own whiskey. They bought Jameson new make and barreled it themselves. Now, if you remember the Irish story, I mean, this is Mitchell & Sons doing very well selling their spot whiskeys. But by the mid-1960s, when whiskey sales are at their lowest point, is when Jameson just merges with Cork Distillers and becomes the Irish Distillers Group, and they consolidate their distilleries. They shut down their old distilleries and they build a new one called the New Middleton Distillery, which was in operation by 71, full swing in 75. And that was also the point where they said, we're no longer going to allow external bonding. And the reason was that part of the reason they believe that whiskey had fallen out of favor is that these bonding shops were cheating. You never knew what you were going to get. Yeah, you have to pay the duty once you open the barrel, but nobody really knows what you do with the barrel after that. So if you're adding more new make to it, or you're cutting it with something else, like, that became problematic as to what you were actually making. And I would never accuse the spot whiskeys of doing this, but there were many bonders back in the day. And so the unreliability of whiskey was part of the problem. And if you recall, when we were talking about why the Scottish whiskey ascend, it's because they got very good at making consistent, reliable product. And this is what the Irish were struggling with. And in this early 70s, the Irish distillers tried to correct this. Now, there was a big outcry because there were some very good folks like Gimli and Mitchell and Sons who made excellent whiskey. But their ultimate solution was to say, okay, we'll do the barreling now at the distillery, because at this point you're not buying wine in barrels anymore anyway, so the barrels are becoming a problem. So barrels will now live at the distillery, but we have an exclusive license to that. And that's how it works to this day. Mitchell & Sons still sells spot whiskeys, but they provide barrels. The barreling is done at the New Middleton Distillery. It's aged there. It's bottled there. And then they exclusively sell it. So it's a very different business model. And I'm somewhat remiss when I did the Irish part, the conversation about this, where I just said, hey, Irish distillers bought up all these brands. They didn't. They created licensing agreements around them. And so it operates in a somewhat different style, where Mitchell & Sons is a sole distributor, but also has direct influence over it. Because the other thing that Mitchell & Sons does is they have closer relationships with certain wineries that go back for a century or more. Wineries like Leoville Barton.
My favorite.
Out of Bartow. Lovely wine.
I love Leoville.
And, and generally speaking, you don't see these very often, but they still make additions of Green Spot that finish in wine casks. So a normal production of Green Spot splits a given malting, really the new make from Jameson, into bourbon and sherry casks. And then after a certain period of time, they combine them and will do a finishing stage for a couple of years in a wine cask. And Leo Barton is one of them, and that's a Bordeaux. They also work with Chateau Montelena, which is Zinfandel. And the reason I brought this up is this year they started making an addition based on an Okanagan distiller winery called Quail's Gate. And so they do a two-year finish in Quail's Gate Pinot Noir barrels to make a fairly distinct version of Green Spot. And so traditional Green Spot, which doesn't have a, used to have a 10 on it. It used to be a 10 year. You'll notice that the current modern Green Spot, which is about $50 US, does not have an age appellation on it. It's because it's actually a combination of 7 and 10 year old. And they don't want to put a 7 on it because people don't like that number. There are special edition Green Spots. Yeah. There are special edition Green Spots that are 10 years old, and you'll see the number on them when it's only 10. But these wine finished versions go back to the original Mitchell and Sons versions of their whiskeys by adding this finishing step in wine cast. It makes it kind of special. And the fact that one of them is a Canadian one, I think, is very cool, except that it's only available in Canada.
So it's interesting because it sounds like the barrel and the aging is more critical to the quality and flavor of the whiskey than the actual distilling of it. Or is that not the case?
For the most part, that's true, because you always, you know, it's a clear spirit when it comes out of the still.
Yeah.
Now, and there's lots of conversations about the role of the mash bill, the different grains, and the style of distillation. And as we know with Irish, that's, they do almost anything. They use the coffee still. They'll do finish in pot stills. Famously, Jameson is pot distilled. And so all of the spot whiskeys are pot distilled as well. Very similar to the Scottish style, but the distilling definitely is more flexible. And how high you distill it to, and then what you cut it down to before you barrel it, has a lot to do with the effects. In the end, this alcohol is a solvent, and you're using that solvent to extract flavors from oak.
Good, I get it. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the different barrels all play a role. Because bourbon barrels are only ever used once by American bourbon, they're relatively inexpensive and they're very plentiful. And because bourbon distillers put their bourbon into barrels at 62.5% ABV, typically the whiskey distiller puts it in at 64.5. So they're pulling a little harder on the wood, as well as extracting some of those bourbon flavors.
Yeah.
Sherry caskings come in even lower. And so they, extraction levels are higher. They pull more flavor that way. Straight wine cask whiskeys are very rare because the alcohol levels are so low in the wood. Long aging in them isn't good, which is why you see them typically being used as finishing casks, 1 or 2 years at most. And often the first fill with whiskey isn't the best version of that. Yeah. It's subsequent uses of those casks that make the most flavorful whiskeys. So it's a complicated game. But those mixed barrelings are also an ability to make a consistent flavor. that by having a choice of barrels, all with different flavors in them, you get to the flavor profile that your customer is expecting. That's really the art of modern whiskey, is to get to those consistent flavors.
Very interesting. Yeah.
So all of those wine variants are about $100. If you can find them, both the Louis, I looked up Leo Barton and Chateau Montelena on Total Wines, and I could find them for about $100. The regular Green Spot's 50. Unfortunately, the Quail's Gate, it looks like it's British Columbia only. It's even the Ontario Whiskey Board or Ontario Liquor Board doesn't have any. So you got to come up here if you want one.
We have quite a bit of the Leoville. Barton
as the Bordeaux.
Yeah, we like the Bordeaux's. Yeah.
And so you might want to grab the green spot of it, because a great way to finish a meal. Drink a little Louis Bordeaux at dinner and then finish with the whiskey. That's cool. Yeah. I'd like that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Richard Campbell. Always love the brown liquor, aka green liquor spot on the show. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You'll find Richard at runasradio.com. That's where the Run As Radio podcast and the .NET Rock podcasts live. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's here every Wednesday, except for next Wednesday, when he's going to be out there with a big fish in Montana.
More than me, Warren won.
Yeah. Fish he doesn't want to eat.
Yep. Tastes like mud.
Well, you know, it's because they're sifting mud for nymphs.
They sift mud for nymphs. That's true.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would say the mud isn't the problem, it's the nymphs, but that's just me.
But it's also how we fish them, too. You use a nymph rig, which is a sinking rig, to pull them up.
Let them in the mud.
But when the drakes are breeding, then you use a drake fly and you pull them off the surface, and they taste much better.
What is happening?
When the drakes are breeding.
When the drakes are breeding.
The very first person I go to is Paul Thurrott, thurrott.com, thurrottgood.com. Become a premium member. Get all the great stuff he writes. It's really, you do such a good job. And, of course, his books, don't forget, are at leanpub.com, including the field guide to Windows 11. Now with Windows 10 inside, just like a engine block mailbox. Yeah. You just stuck.
Like a virus of some kind.
Windows 10 right in there. And the new one, Windows Everywhere, which is all about the history of Windows through its languages and development. Really good stuff. Paul, thank you. Richard, thank you. Paul, it's just you and me next week, unless you want to bring in somebody. We should call Mary Jo. Every time I ask her, she says no.
Right.
So
you'll be happy to hear she also says no to me, but I'll see what I can do.
It'd be kind of fun. Anyway, we'll be back here. We do the show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. You don't have to watch us live, but if you feel like that, we stream the live production of the show, audio and video, as we do with almost all our shows, at live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live in our IRC, open to all. All you need is a browser at irc.twit.tv. If you are a member of Club Twit, of course, the Club Twit Discord is open to you, and there is great stuff happening. This Thursday, tomorrow, on the Club Twit Discord, Stacey's Book Club. At 9 a.m., she's doing, I think, what I've heard is a very good sci-fi book from Annalee Newitz. I interviewed her on her last book. It's called The Terraformers, the new one. And, big deal, we're going to have Hugh Howey on tomorrow at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, the author of the Silo series. So even if you haven't read the book, if you've watched the Apple TV Plus series, which is quite good, it ends tomorrow or day after tomorrow. Hugh Howey in a conversation with Aunt Pruitt in the Club Twit stage tomorrow at 1 p.m. We're doing more Club Twit stuff. Paul does a Club Twit show, Hands on Windows. We have Hands on Macintosh with Micah Sargent. Scott Wilkinson has brought back Home Theater Geeks for our club members. When we started the club 2 years ago, we said, look, our shows that are free are going to maintain. Will always be free, but there, you know, with podcast advertising dwindling, with audiences shrinking, more and more we're dependent on the club, and so it makes it possible for us to continue to launch new shows. So Jason Howell will be launching an AI show. Yesterday he had a kind of a roundtable discussion with club members about what might be in that AI show. Keep watching for that if you're in the club. If you're not, get ad-free versions of all of our shows, special shows we don't put out anywhere else, like the upcoming AI show, and access to the Club Twit Discord. $7 a month. That's nothing. That's less than one glass of Green Spot. $7 a month. Just go to twit.tv/clubtwit and feel good knowing you're supporting what we do. If you want to see Twit continue, join the club. twit.tv/clubtwit. After the fact, you can get on-demand versions for free because they're ad-supported at twit.tv/ww. There's a YouTube channel, also ad-supported, where you can watch the show. And probably the best thing to do, club member or not, is subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That way you'll get it and you'll have it and you'll know whenever you're in the mood, you can hear Windows Weekly. Thank you, Paul. Have a great time in Montana, Richard. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Have a great 4th of July, Paul.
Thank you. You
coming too. Tuesday, and we will see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey there, I'm Micah Sargent. Look, as a geek myself, I feel it's only fair if I admit something. We can be kind of hard to shop for. So what do you get for that geek in your life who has everything already? Well, a Club Twit gift subscription, of course. Twit podcasts keep them informed and entertained with the most relevant tech news podcasts available. With a Club Twit subscription, they're going to get access to all of our podcasts ad-free, exclusive outtakes, behind-the-scenes and special content, and, I love this, exclusive shows like my own Hands on Mac and Hands on Windows from Paul Thurrott, as well as the Untitled Linux Show. So purchase your geek's gift at twit.tv/clubtwit, and they will thank you every day.